just to indicate, Commissioner, that we had engagement with stakeholders yesterday, and I think there was a delegation from your office that was there yesterday, so they get a sense of the type of of advice we were receiving from various stakeholders. The intention really is for us to interrogate your performance over the financial year 2010-2011. And for us, ultimately, on the basis of our interaction with you, to prepare a report for the budget review process, as you understand. And that budget review process informs Prime Minister of Finance ultimately in terms of how much money he's going to give to you or not give to you on the basis and on the strength of whatever you put or pitch for as a department, and also our own recommendations and observations. So it is a very important meeting from that point of view. But we also think it's a very important meeting because we've all committed to improving the service delivery. So it's not just about the budget, but it's about service delivery. But the immediate is that we will engage with your performance over the past 12 months, prepare a report, submit it to Parliament, and ultimately to those that take decisions on the budget. We are scheduled tomorrow to discuss the first quarter for the current financial year. So if there's any spillovers from what we're doing today, we can always do a bit of it tomorrow, because it should be a seamless process. It doesn't mean that the financial year ends and there's some new process. It should be a seamless process. So whatever we can't cover today, we could always follow up tomorrow. And we are to submit a report to Parliament on the 21st, I think, memory serves me correctly, or by the 21st, this committee must have approved its report. So we really have got today and tomorrow, and we've asked Cindy to get in touch, Commissioner. I think this is important that you take note. We've asked for a few of your departments to come and see us over the next 2 days next week. Legal, IT, the Department Investigation Unit, Internal Audit, and the Audit Committee. And they're going to come and see us next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, or Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, or Wednesday and Thursday, all part of our preparation for our report. So we're not fussy who leads that delegation. You could all come, or you could send the appropriate people, but we do want the heads of those various units, and I think Cindy has requested accordingly. So it doesn't have to be the entire team, but if the entire team needs to come along, we're happy. But we would need to see those individuals on Tuesday and Wednesday. Cindy would have sent that email. If not, it will get to you shortly. And hopefully on Thursday, we'll then be able to tie everything up and submit the report. For today, we are going to allow you an hour to do your entire presentation. We've got 3 hours until 5. An hour to do everything that you need to do in terms of your presentation. And then we will engage with it today and tomorrow and the whole of next week. So that is what it is, Commissioner. We're handing over to you. It is 2:05. At 3 o'clock, we will then ask you to stop, and we will ask members then to engage with your input. Is that acceptable to members? Yes. All right, Commissioner, over to you and your team. Thank you, sir.
Chairperson, honorable members of the committee, we thank you for, once again, this ability to engage with yourselves. We are here to present to yourselves the annual report of the year 2010-2011. And want to indicate that we as a department are grateful for this opportunity. But most importantly, Chairperson, is to emphasize and underpin that day, the financial year 2010-2011, which we took as leadership in May, and there were issues that we needed to deal with and take ownership of the process as well. I am proud as a team here and the head of this unit that within the confines and the challenges that we encountered as leadership, we've been able to do the best that we could. And indeed, we would have liked to have raised the bar to a much higher level. And it is this team, Chairperson, and the Portfolio Committee that is present here that is going to provide you with the report in detail. However, we are not that happy with the outcome of the report in terms of the qualified audit that we received. And we cannot be proud in that respect, but we want to highlight the fact that when we sat with the Auditor General on the 15th of May last year, there were serious challenges that were put before us, and those challenges needed to be dealt with speedily, efficiently, and effectively. If we looked at the desk, what you call the desktop, or the dashboard process which was presented to us by the Auditor General on the 15th and subsequent dates, it was red. And we made aware that there were three critical areas that we needed to deal with. One is leadership, governance, and performance information. And indeed, given the complexities of the issues that were before us, I am proud, despite the audit opinion that is given to us, that we have done the best that we could within the limited time. Because if we go back to the dashboard that was presented to us by the Auditor General at the time, there's a remarkable change of issues and the matters that were raised in the previous audit report, which qualify the department. And indeed, when we met with yourselves, we indicated that we were not in a position to provide you with a clean report, but working towards a clean audit report. By so saying, Chairperson, I'm not trying to camouflage the realities and the problems that are there. Suffice to indicate that we have set ourselves a target and we have set ourselves a clear deliverable in the subsequent financial year. And I would like, therefore, as we go through the presentation that is before us, also have an understanding that the issues which will be there, which will bedevil us, but we are doing everything possible for us to achieve the intended objective. 2010-2011 has not been an easy year, but from a leadership perspective, I can certainly say that we have a leadership core that is able to respond to issues and be accountable for the activities that we have. And I would like to confirm and also assure this committee that the commitments that we make here are firm and commitments that we'd like to keep. And it's on record, Chairperson, that when you look at the audit report and the qualified opinion that has been expressed here, is completely different from what has been in the department. And some of the challenges are not departmental challenges, they are transversal issues which reside with the National Treasury. I would therefore, with your permission and indulgence, Chairperson, request my team to do a presentation, and therefore, on the basis of that, engage with yourselves on the issues that you want to raise with us. Cognizant of the fact that we want to have this audit committee, the Portfolio Committee of Correctional Services, at what particular point in time, also to lead in glory of having a clean audit report. It is my wish and it is my intention, and it is the commitment of this team, Chairperson, and the members of the Portfolio Committee, that we shall be able to have a clean audit report. I'm saying this with a conviction that much of the work has been done, And indeed, the quality of the reporting processes throughout the engagement that we have had with yourselves, there is a remarkable improvement. Much can be achieved, and therefore I request with your indulgence that we do our presentation as requested. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, honourable members, good afternoon. The presentation will take two parts to it. I will speak to the performance information part of the annual report, and the CFO will then take over to deal with the annual financial statement. If we can start then on the performance achievements of the last year, we will deal with a brief overview. We will then go through the programs. We are not intending to present every single indicator figure, the data that is in the report, but what we have highlighted in the presentation is some of the comparisons between the previous financial year and this year, but then also trying to give the committee a sense of how the department is taking issues forward to address and improve service delivery. If we can move then to the overview, certainly if we look at the year past, it's a mixed year of achievements and challenges. The achievements in particular relate to the participation of inmates in development programs, with an important role there in relation to our partnerships with stakeholders in that regard. The issues of ensuring that we are able to concentrate our resources has been one of the issues that we've been focusing on during the course of that year, trying to ensure that we can improve centre-level service delivery and promote corrections as a societal responsibility and build that level of delivery. Our overcrowding levels have been reduced by 5.75%, significantly down on the previous financial year of 19. That is due to a multi-pronged overcrowding strategy, diversion options, additional bed spaces, and a number of projects that going forward will be impacting further on the reduction of overcrowding. We're proud of that process, but we certainly are not saying that it is reaching a level at which we can be comfortable. So it remains still one of our top priority areas to address as it underpins service delivery throughout our department. Particular challenges that we must flag for the portfolio committee are the constraints in human resources, inadequate staffing levels for the shift system, the loss of scarce skills. In that financial year past, the 10-11 one, the downward trend that we've seen over a number of previous years around security breaches was not sustained. There are a number of elements that feed into it, inadequate compliance with security policy being one, but inadequate attention to security as a priority service, but also one in which a couple of mass incidents shifted the statistics quite considerably. We do want to just note at this point that in the strategic plan of 10-11, we had distinguished between a regulatory and monitoring strategy, which was the responsibilities of the national office, and operational strategy, which is the responsibilities of the region. In terms of reporting, in order to avoid duplicate reporting where there is a strategy that was in both parts of it, we have pulled that information into one place, and we have noted in the strategic plan exactly where that has been done. This is also to try and ensure that we've got an alignment between the strategic plan and the guidelines for annual reporting, bearing in mind that Treasury had during the course of the year developed and published the strategic planning framework, and the annual reporting framework then took place in alignment with that. Moving then to the sub-program of finance, the CFO will obviously deal with the levels of expenditure in detail. I'm not going to speak to it, but the level of underspending is of course there for you. In terms of our increase in contracts to HDI, there was a significant improvement over the previous financial year. The qualifications of the 2 years remain on movable tangible assets, but I think that the Commissioner has also spoken to that in his opening remarks. We are concerned in terms of matters of emphasis with unauthorized expenditure, and it is a focus going forward. The corrective measures, the action plan, has been developed. It is being monitored on a monthly basis, and I think our establishment of the internal control and compliance component within finance will assist us to to monitor that and ensure that we can adjust and take whatever corrective interventions are necessary to really deliver on the action plan going forward. Moving to the corporate services sub-program, the vacancy rate that we had reported on in the 9-10 was 12% on an establishment of 46,000. In terms of the 10-11, our approved establishment, the vacancy rate was as 13.28%. We have included here in this presentation our vacancy rate calculated against the funded establishment, because the portfolio committee will be aware that our funded establishment is 41,500. And it's important in terms of the alignment with the APP process of going forward that that 3.4 vacancy rate is then compared with the target going forward in the annual performance plan. In terms of grievances, we had a significant improvement in relation to the finalization of grievances within a 30-day period, that compliance issue, but the compliance is still at only 50%. It's not at a level that we'd be comfortable about. The average period for suspensions is 52.5 days, and the cost of the suspensions is there. That's always one of the issues in which it's a necessary evil in a sense, but for us the priority is to be able to keep the time period as minimal as possible. Picking up then on the issues where our focus in the current APP is aimed to address and further enhance the turning around of these critical areas, the APP identifies the filling of all funded vacant posts as a priority for this year, the finalization of function and structure alignment, the finalization of all outstanding grievances longer than 30 days, so clearing that backlog, and then obviously a critical element that underpins a lot of the challenges that we had in the 2010-11 delivery, which is the review of the shift system given our staffing level and the need of the staffing level for the shift system. Moving then to the central services sub-program, our targets there relate to the improved management of litigation of cases. We functioned above our target in this regard. 153 cases were found judged in favour of DCS, 47 cases went against DCS. I'm sure the details of this chairperson would be what you would be wanting to interrogate in the next week's session. The fraud and corruption, our success rate in the disciplinary matters was above the target that we had set. On IT issues, the development of the remand detention offender management system was behind schedule during that financial year, and it's a process that has been put on hold pending the adjustment, the refinement of the application platform rationalization, the ICT basic infrastructure, that we'll be able to ensure that we can go ahead effectively with the remand detention offender management system and various of the other major MISP project. The Southern African Corrections Forum was launched. We participated in the Interstate Defence and Security Committee, in particular in relation to the interstate transfer of prisoners, and we've identified various areas of cooperation within SADC. Moving to the next slide. In terms of the information communications area, the APP highlights particularly important areas of work that underpin our ability to really deliver on our MRP project, the readiness of a virtual private network, a new network with consolidated servers and automated security policies, our communication strategy, developing an integrated communication and marketing strategy is envisaged, particularly important in terms of enhancing our stakeholder interaction and our partnerships. And the last element there is the creation of the new branch of UCSA that enables us to focus more intensely on formalized regional, continental, and international partnerships. Under the management budget program, the critical issue there is the monitoring of compliance, both in terms of the head office level and in terms of the regions. The head office overall performance had improved, the regions, the overall performance had declined by 2%. What underpins this is the challenges of the staffing levels, the migration to centre-based, and the consequences of those migration processes. It is a priority area for us to be able to pick up on and ensure that we can improve the level of compliance in the department. Moving then to the security budget program, the issue of assaults is one of the key priority areas that we need to be able to look at. The assaults is not at the level that we would want it to be. We've identified a problem in terms of assaults of underreporting in previous years and inconsistent reporting in previous years. So the process of addressing this has started with various interventions, including the development of better data capturing tools. But I think importantly, the technical indicator descriptor that defines very clearly what the indicator requires us to measure, so that we have a single point of reference across the department and should remove the inconsistencies in the reporting that we've had. So that's part of what explains the increase in the reporting on assault in the 10-11 financial year. In relation to the escapes, we've identified two elements there in terms of the increase in the number of escapes. So one is the two mass escapes, and the other is the negligence or non-adherence to security procedures underpinned by the migrations of staff during that financial year. The unnatural deaths, although it's an increase of only one, it is one too many. We want that to be something that is significantly decreasing, and the suicides does remain a challenge in relation to the unnatural deaths within the department. So we are involved in ongoing processes to tighten up security measures controlled by managers in order to address the issue of escapes and assaults. The strategies to deal with suicides is being reviewed during the course of this financial year. In the current APP, we've identified the appointment of a chief security officer as one, which enables us to have a very focused monitoring of security information. The gang management strategy and the approval of the gang management unit is part of this year's planning. The full functionality of the turnstiles in the correctional centres, the approval and development and approval of a security technology strategy, so we are able to maximise the use of technology. The approved electronic inmate tracking system, automated personnel identification system, which is in the process of being rolled out in this financial year. The utilisation of body scanning equipment that needs to be brought into the department, a partnership with Home Affairs to take that APIS, the automated personnel identification system, and link it to APIS, the fingerprinting information, and then obviously the approval of revised security policy and procedures and ongoing process in the department. Moving then to the corrections budget program, I've spoken on the overcrowding. I think the important element to flag for that 10-11 financial year is the really enhanced collaboration with the criminal justice system departments, the multi-pronged overcrowding strategy, addressing some of the remand detention issues, addressing the non-custodial sentences, albeit that they are not being utilised at the full extent that we would want at this point. Our involvement of offenders participating in corrections programs being aimed at correcting the specific offence-related behaviour, the corrections program. What is important to flag here is that the discrepancy in those figures is because in the previous year we had reported only on programs run by the department, not programs run by external service providers. And going forward, we will ensure that we report on all programs delivered in our department. The draft policy on remand detention has been developed in the previous year. The amendment to the legislation the Portfolio Committee is acutely aware of, as the white paper on remand detention, which was approved by Cabinet in the financial year under review. The issue of the correctional sentence plan has continued significant improvement in terms of the number of offenders, remembering that we had addressed a two-prong process of newly admitted offenders as well as then dealing with the backlog of people who were already in our system. In terms of the current APP, the interventions that will enable us to lift the bar and be able to improve that delivery, the target is to ensure that 100% of the newly admitted offenders with sentences longer than 24 months have comprehensive profiles, that there is a focus on offenders who've completed correctional programs rather than on them participating, We need to be able to measure those that have come out of those programs, because it's then that one is better able to start measuring the rehabilitative effect of correctional programs. That measurement of the impact of the programs is a challenge that the department still faces. The work on the offender neighbor, which has been a priority of our interaction with the portfolio committee, the approval of the policy on that is a target for this year. The finalization of interstate protocols on transfers of offenders is an intervention this year, and again that impacts on our levels of overcrowding. The identification of dedicated facilities to house offenders with sentences less than 24 months, that we are able to disaggregate and have appropriate interventions for short-term sentences as opposed to offenders with long-term sentences. The promotion of the bail protocol, the approval of regulations relating to remand detainees, the approval of the operational classification system. So that whole area of ensuring that we start operationalizing the elements of both the Act and the Amendments Act and the White Paper. The rationalization of correctional centres, in particular to ensure that we've got maximal utilization of staff within centres, and we can correct some of the severe imbalances in the number of in the staff ratio in smaller centres. And then the maximized utilization of land allocated to DCS, which again links into ensuring that we aim to enhance our productivity being able to go forward. So those are the interventions in terms of corrections that should build on the gains of the previous year, but also address the areas in which we have not achieved what we would have wanted to have achieved in the previous year. Moving then to care, in terms of our offenders on ARVs, we have a target that is underachieved in relation to ARVs. We have, however, significantly overachieved in relation to the issue of the testing, the HIV testing of our inmates. There's a very significant voluntary testing campaign run during the year with very significant impact. I think that we need to bear in mind that in terms of the ARV treatment, the setting of a target is a very difficult process, because in fact you only go on ARVs when your body says that you need it and your doctor says you need it. So the target setting is a bit of a complex one in that environment. There has been significant training conducted in the regions during that financial year around health and nutritional policies. The vacancy rate in relation to scarce skills continues to be a challenge in the department. We've cited there for you the level of the vacancy rate in terms of scarce skills. We do still have the various mechanisms for attracting and retaining skills within those ambits. It's improved over a time period, but it's not significantly out of the woods, and we still remain with major challenges in that regard. We have very significant partnerships with stakeholders in the financial year within the care program, and that has resulted in very significant improvement in offender participation. But let's bear in mind that going forward, the corrections care and development programs have been recategorized. So you will, in the year going forward, see a very significant change here, because in this financial year of 2011, a lot of what we were reporting on under care programs were in fact corrections and development programs, so you will get a disjuncture in the figures going forward into the first quarter of this financial year. The current ATP focuses in particular on the investigating the functioning of food service units and ensuring that we are ready to be able to deliver our nutritional services effectively and in compliance with our legislation and policy. In terms of development, this is the area that in the overview we reflected as being an area of major achievement. But the first element, which is the involvement of offenders in literacy programs, did decrease. But I think that part of what we need to focus on is that the more that we involve offenders in literacy programs, the smaller the group of people in our facility who require literacy interventions, and in fact the greater the number who can participate in the second area, which is in the ABET. So you see in ABET an increase of just under 2,000 against the previous year. The FET participation also showed a significant increase. The dramatic decrease in participation in skills development, decline due to the refining of reporting and skills development, and our target, our challenge there was to ensure that double counting doesn't take place. So I think that what you're also seeing in this report is areas in which, through our focus on performance information, we have realized inconsistencies or inaccuracies in the way in which we've been reporting, and we've taken the necessary steps to ensure that we address those aspects. In terms of the target of involving offenders in activities and production workshops, we didn't achieve it due to the vacancies of artisan posts, a challenge that we are focused on trying to address, particularly going forward. In agricultural activities, our targets have not been achieved. In the main, the difficulty of the appropriate shift system for centres where we've got agricultural activities and our starting level in relation to those challenges. In terms of our APP going forward, there is a very strong emphasis on offender involvement in development programs, but with a very specific focus of involving youth in informal education. And the targets have been set quite clearly around increasing the number of formally recognized schools that we have within our facilities, and ultimately getting to the point where all of our youth development centers become formally recognized schools. Moving then to social reintegration, the decrease in parole violations is recorded there. We had more cases referred to the Parole Review Board, an important part in a sense of being able to ensure that there is a degree of consistency and that we are benchmarking the functioning of the Parole Board and making sure that we address anomalies as we go forward. The participation of victims in parole hearings remains a major challenge. We are not happy with the level of 253. We want it to be significantly higher, but when one compares it over the previous year, it is a very significant increase. Our remaining challenge is the difficulty of locating victims, particularly for crimes that have been committed substantial time periods ahead. Obviously, the current trial processes result in victims being more easily identified, and the database will assist with that. The current APP interventions in relation to social reintegration are aiming to increase the probationers under community corrections. Not something that we can do on our own, a critical element of our criminal justice system and ensuring that the courts identify community corrections as a viable alternative to incarceration. The electronic monitoring system for parolees, probationers, the establishment of the medical advisory board in relation to medical parole, and then the establishment of a framework for halfway houses. A number of those elements also feeding into our intention going forward to significantly reduce the level of overcrowding. Our final budget program is then the facilities budget program. The total number of beds that were created in 2009-10 are there. In 2010-11, there were none created. However, there are a number of projects that the intention is to increase new bed spaces, and the figures are there in terms of the processes in relation to them, and ultimately the number of additional beds that will be delivered when they are complete. Important just to re-emphasize what we said before, that facilities projects are seldom one-year projects. They do span over a number of years. So before you actually see the number of the actual increase in bed spaces, you have the reporting on the percentage increase. I think important also to flag that the 98% in terms of Brunsley is for phase one of Brunsley. There is a further phase that is reported on in this financial year. So when you see the first quarterly report, that will make sense against phase one and phase two. The current APP, it's a completion of those projects in relation to that, although the Sanin project that is reported on there has a completion date for 2013. The final part of the presentation, Chairperson and Honourable Members, deals with the findings on performance information. Although this is not an expressed opinion in the audit report, the AG has shared with you the observations that they have given to us, and we have summarised here for you the findings. I think that what is important then is for us to be able to give you in the next slide, rather than speaking through each of those, because I think that in the presentation from the AG, they have already spoken through the issues that they have found to our response to those processes. We have developed an action plan that is aimed to address the issues raised by the AG in relation to the management of performance information and the reporting on performance information. That will be monitored on a monthly, month-to-month basis going forward, and it identifies very clearly the responsibilities of the various different role players in ensuring that we can move forward. The logic model for DCS has been reviewed and refined, and I think the significance of that is that it enables us to very clearly draw a link between our key performance indicators and the core strategic objectives of the department that are embedded in the logic model. We conducted at the end of last financial year a diagnostic report. We tasked the technical assistance unit from Treasury to do that. The recommendations of that is an integral part of the action plan going forward, and we are in the process of ensuring that we address those elements. There was a very clear synergy between the diagnosis that they've done and the recommendations that they've made and the findings of the AG. The publication of the technical indicator descriptor is a critical aspect in terms of moving forward to improved performance information and improved reporting, because it defines very clearly the definition of the indicators, it defines the data elements that are required to be measured in order to be able to report on the indicators, it defines the source documents in relation to indicators, and it defines who is responsible for collection and ultimately who is responsible at the national level for the management of that program performance information. That process then enables us across all of our curricular centres to have a common understanding. At the moment, we are in a process of engaging with the regions to ensure that we enable the heads of centres, area commissioners, area coordinators, and the regional heads and regional DRCs and regional commissioners to have an understanding of that document so that we can move forward in one sense from that. We've also implemented quarterly management performance review meetings so that we are able to look at the quality of our performance information, but also to evaluate our level of performance and focus on the corrective steps, corrective interventions that are necessary where we are not meeting our targets. So we have done that for the first quarter, and we will be doing that on a quarterly basis throughout this year. That is sitting on top of a monthly performance information reporting process that enables us to ensure that we are able to track month by month our ability to meet our targets as defined in the APP. Bearing in mind that the APP now sets very clear quarterly targets, so it also enables us to have a far more accurate sense of where we are going during the course of the year. See, if I'm cutting into your time, so let me move through this. Refining data capturing tools, what is important for us to flag for the portfolio committee is that we are currently doing the final development on an APP data capturing tool, which will enable us to capture the data at management area level, but capture it for each of the centres and be able to replicate that up. So our ability to verify that data will be significantly improved by the end of the third quarter of this year. We've reviewed our monitoring evaluation policy. It will be finalised during the course of this month. I've spoken on the regional information systems on the performance of management performance information, taking the AG findings down to the regions from centre head through the management of the regions to ensure that we are able to be on the same page. We've done both Gauteng and Eastern Cape today, and we will be moving forward on that. We've also recognised that unless we put in place, particularly at centre level, dedicated performance information management capacity, we will not really manage to turn this around. At the moment, it is part and parcel of general responsibilities. There isn't that level of performance management, performance information expertise there, and that is one of the issues that we want to be able to go forward. And finally, cooperation between finance and OMS aimed at improving compliance and the quality of reporting. So effectively, in 12-13, bearing in mind that we've got new budget programs, so we have to republish a strategic plan and an APP, the alignment of planning, resourcing planning, and reporting process is a critical process that will be on the basis of the revised logic model, the revised indicators, which will be developed during this mid-year review period that happens in October through to November, the strengthening of capacity at all management levels, but particularly with a focus on centre level, because that's to a very large extent where the bulk of our performance information comes from. I think, Chairperson, in doing that, we hope that we've given you a sense of where we've achieved, where we've underachieved, but a sense also that there is no Chinese wall between the annual report and our APP process going forward, and that the, a number of the issues that have been identified in the annual report, in fact, are entrenched in our APP going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My report will cover expenditure pattern, which is the financial report for 2010-2011, as well as the audit outcome by AGSA. The spending pattern for national expenditure, the budget that was allocated to the department for that year was 15,047,000, and the expenditure was 14,690,000. And the department underspent by 728 million, which amounting to 4.72%. Going back to what contributed to that underspending, in terms of the program administration, the department underspent by 239 million, of which it was because of the compensation of employees, of which some of the positions were advertised, but they were not filled by the end of the financial year. Also, the late invoices that were received from FICA, of which it was only been paid during the current financial year. Moving to the security program, that program underspent by 153 million. Of which is also because of the compensation of employees of the position, some of the positions were not filled there. The bulk of this understanding, Chairperson, I must indicate that is attributed because of the compensation of employees. If one moves to the program care, it still is also the compensation of employees, and also the outstanding of OSD for psychologists that were not been finalized. The other one, Chairperson, is the program development center. Is the development of which the low spending there was the material, agricultural material that were ordered but were not received in time, so we did not able to pay for those ones. In terms of the facilities, the underspending there was 255, but I need to indicate that in terms of that underspending, the department able to apply for the rollover from Treasury, and then we received the rollover of 253, but which had the conditional. In terms of the economic classification, the compensation of employees alone underspent by 365 million based on the position that were not filled, and also the vacancies that become when people are leaving the department. Under goods and services, the underspending there was 100 million, and it's still also, in terms of that, it was because of CETA, the invoices that were not yet delivered by CETA before the year end. Under the capital assets, the underspending there was 262 million based on the invoices that were not been paid, but as I indicated that in some of that amount we applied for the rollover, of which was approved by Treasury. Chairperson, I will, because I was explaining the same spreadsheet on page 8 and also on page 9, I would like to move straight to the audit outcomes of the AGSA. Chairperson, I will like to spend more time on this one. If we remember where the department comes from, the department comes from where the problem of the department was the opening balance on the asset register, where Auditor General cannot express any opinion on the asset register. That's where the department, where the opening balance was not configured. And also the other problem going back was the existence of assets, where the assets because the asset on the floor does not talk to the asset register. The valuation of assets, the misclassification of assets. But in terms of at the end of the financial year, all those areas that were concerned in the past by Auditor General were managed to be cleared in terms of affecting the audit report. They were not affecting any audit report. It means we're clear. Okay? But, Chairperson, I would like to stress this, that in terms of the management letter to the Adam important matter, it's still there, of which one still needed to clear, no matter how small it is. We still have to clear those ones, so that we'll make sure that in the even in the near future, it won't able to come back. Chairperson, the next page, I will deal with the basis of qualification, Chairperson. The basis of qualification was in two folds. Was the non-cash additions as well as the non-cash disposal. In terms of non-cash additions, the end balance was correct, was balancing, but in terms of the disclosure in the financial statement, the non-cash addition and addition are disclosed separately, as well as the disposal. That was made us to be qualified. In terms of why we were qualified, Chairperson, before I get into the action taken, in terms of the framework, accounting framework that designed by Treasury, does not take care of interstore transfer. It does not take care of interstore transfer. But when you look into logins to the system that has been used, in terms of interstore transfer, instead of transfer in, transfer out, it has been categorized as non-cash addition. That's where the problem was. Chairperson, we as a department, since we received that, we managed to engage with the Treasury. As one is sitting here now, we managed to correct the framework in order to talk to these interstore transfers within the department. Also, in terms of the logic, Chairperson, what is actually going to happen now, all the logic deficiencies will be able to be corrected to the system. The system people already told us that by the end of January, it will be corrected, Chairperson. The annual financial statement framework, also on classification, it also includes now the interstore transfer. The department also implemented the monthly reconciliation. Why do we have to implement the monthly reconciliation? I need to explain this, because I no longer want to rely on the system. I want to keep the manual system in case where there is debt at that time is not yet corrected to the login. I know that I got a manual system of which I will prove to the auditor to say all these transactions is the inter-source transfer of which it moved from this store to this store. It's not a non-cash addition. That's why we are doing this monthly reconciliation from now, Chairperson. And also, Chairperson, the other thing that the department already done is to issue the circular to all the regions, including the center, to say, stop this interstore transfer of assets. The reason, Chairperson, why one stopping this, because we must also remember, the members must also remember that the end, when we got the audit report, it was already in July. 4 months is already gone. So we want to reconcile from April up to that point in time so that we're able to monitor all these interstore transfers. So there is no interstore transfer that is taking place in any of our centers. And the other one, Chairperson, is in terms of, I mentioned that we engage with the Treasury in terms of asking them to amend the lottery system, and also the meetings with the Treasury in terms of each and every month. Each and every month, the department, what it's doing is to have the steering committee, where even the Auditor General, if they are available, to come and observe those meetings. But so far, they did not come to observe those meetings, where we track whatever we said we'll achieve to make sure that those reconciliations does make sense. Are we achieving what we wanted to achieve, Chairperson? And also, Chairperson, in terms of Treasury, they already told us that by the end of January, we will be able to identify in logging what was the real interstate transfer. Because what is the issue? You find that when we make the furniture, it's also categorized as a non-cash addition. Now, it's everything is mixed. But by doing this reconciliation, we're able to categorize each category of these non-cash additions so that we're able to disclose the correct figure of the interstate transfer. That was the intent, how we're going to address the qualification. Chairperson, I'm not one to make promises to this committee, but the way things are going at this point in time, it looks like we might be able to achieve what we want to achieve in terms of the qualification. In terms of the emphasis of matters, Chairperson, that was raised, one of the emphasis of matter was the unauthorized expenditure. That unauthorized expenditure occurs during the 2008-2009 financial year, which was not yet been cleared. The department appeared to the SCOPA this year on the 11th of August, so that to get the approval of that unauthorized expenditure. But the SCOPA requested that the department, as well as Treasury, we need to sit down with Treasury to agree what actually happened, of which we did, Chairperson. We met with Treasury, and then we managed to agree with Treasury, saying that in terms of that unauthorized expenditure, they will recommend to the SCOPA, saying that they will recommend that will fund within our budget, looking our expenditure pattern, Chairperson, as the department as of now is underspending on its budget within current financial year. So that is where we are, that it will be cleared this year, Chairperson. Also, what we stated to Treasury, we recommended that we'll be happy if this unauthorized expenditure must be finalized this year, so that it will be cleared in our books when the Auditor General comes next year. It's already not there. It's already clear. That's what we emphasize to Treasury Chairperson. Also come to the material losses. Material losses, Chairperson, it was there for 3.3 million, 3.4 million, which is 3387. It's made out of the damage to the vehicles and also the claims. Chairperson, I need to stress this. The damage is this 2.9 is the amount that was written off within that year, 2010-2011, 2.9. So, and which was finalized, because most of the cases are still pending for the investigation. The book of losses is more than this deficit, but what was finalized and written off was 2.9. And also the claims that were finalized after the investigation was 469 million, which was came to 3.3. Chairperson, what we have done in terms of to make sure that we monitor these losses, we are trying to make sure that the region are reporting this the decrease on these losses on a monthly basis. So, on a monthly basis, we gather together with all the regional heads and of finance in head office so that they can give me the trend. What is the movement in terms of the finalization of these losses? And also, Chairperson,
while I'm that one, we're going to issue a circular as well regarding the use of state vehicles, because we can see the trend of damaging these vehicles. To say what it will happen if people were not able to follow these things, we're going to issue that circular to all the regions. So to increase the control around this, around the use of state vehicles. And the regional heads of finance are reporting monthly on the action plan. We requested that each and every region, because in the past you find that the region will prepare the action plan, but that action plan is sent to head office. It's only head office monitoring that action plan, not make the region accountable of that particular action plan, what they will be doing. But now what we are saying, on a monthly basis, they need to come and tell us exactly how far they are. We monitor even their action plan as well. If we need to make sure that our action plan talks to their action plan. The other one that has been is the understanding, the material understanding of 728. Chairperson, as we indicated, that the amount of this understanding was attributed by three categories, of which that was the compensation of employees of not filling the position, CETA, as well as the capital assets of not paying. In terms of chairperson of the not filling the position, the department is striving very hard to make sure that the position are filled. But the problem that the department is facing, although the people that we are attracting in the department, therefore to the people who are leaving the department, the people who are leaving are more. So we are trying to make sure that how we're going to address that problem in order to make sure that the expenditure it gets spent, and also we retain people, not losing people. In terms of state chairperson, as I'm speaking right now, it will be an under expenditure this current financial year. The reason, chairperson, the SLA was supposed to be signed at the beginning of the year. As I'm talking right now, the SLA, as far as I know, it has not yet been finalized. Not signed. Now, my argument, we cannot make any transaction without looking to the SLA. The reason why I'm stressing to the SLA, because we want to see the penalty clauses. Because what happened in the past, the SLA that were there, there were no penalty clauses. There were no penalty clauses, which it means if CETA is doing something wrong, what would be the penalty? So we had a meeting with CETA, and they promised that they will finalize that. I did not check in the past 2 weeks if it's been finalized, but that was holding us back at this point in time. In terms of the capital payment, because we saw that DW, Department of Public Works, does not meet our requirement, we engage with IDT in order to speed up this capital project, because we find that the funds are there in order to make sure that our facilities are up to. But at the end of the year, you find that the funds are not spent. Now we engage with IDT in order to make sure that our facilities are, we spend this money in order to make sure that our facilities are in a good shape. So that is what, at this point in time, Chairperson, we have done in order to make sure that we don't have this understanding, this financial year. Even if we have to have not such a huge understanding. Chairperson, in terms of the conclusion, we already have our action plan of how we're going to address all these queries. We're not only looking the audit report. We look to the entire management letter, even up to the single not even material, but we're looking deeper in terms of the queries that were there in order to clear them. We prepared the two action plans. One action plan which will be involving National Treasury. That action plan that will be involving National Treasury, it's already been signed by myself, the MOU signed by myself, National Commissioner, as well as the Accountant General, because there are issues that will need the assistance of National Treasury. Okay, the SSP, we already signed that. And, Chairperson, that is where we are in terms of clearing these issues that were raised by Auditor General in this current financial year. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, CFO, and thank you very much, Ms. Schreiner. We will open up to members then to start their deliberations. But before we do that, Commissioner, you kicked off this meeting by talking about the challenges of leadership and those type of things. And I want to touch on that very briefly before I allow members. Because you're going to get up one day, Commissioner, unless you find a way of dealing with these people that are here, you're going to get up one day and be very exposed. So I'm suggesting that you find a way of, I don't know how you deal with your management meetings, but you are going to be very exposed. I just want to touch on two or three things, Commissioner. The first one, I want to refer you to page 52 of the annual report. You had a target there on page 52 of the annual report. Widely consulted white paper, security cluster, NGOs, and other relevant stakeholders. And your actual was that you did exactly that together with the portfolio committee and everybody else. Now, on the 10th of August, the minister and I address a gathering at WITS where the minister made this statement on the basis of this type of thing. And I don't think that I've ever seen the minister more embarrassed than that day. Because the minute he finished talking about it, everybody in the house asked, where is this white paper that you're talking about? Where is this white paper that you, Mr. Minister, are saying you've consulted with the Correctional Services Portfolio Committee, with all the stakeholders? I equal that, though, Mr. Commissioner. Let me say that to you. I equal that white paper. One of your advisors stood up and said, we are still in the process of editing it. In the department, we are editing it. You guys go and tell the minister that it has been consulted widely. The minister stands up in the platform at which says it, and I've never seen a more embarrassed than that. If I have to tell her this today, I'm sure many of you guys have been fired. Because that day she was very angry about this thing. And that was around about the 10th of August in Advent. If I have to show the minister this page today, Commissioner, I think that many of you will be in trouble. That's why I'm saying you have to find a way, Baba, because you'll get up one day, you're going to be in serious trouble, because I'm not sure how this organization manages itself at top level. But it's not there. You've now said it at WITS. You've now said it to South Africa Incorporated, that you've discussed it with this portfolio committee. This portfolio committee has never seen it. Stakeholders behind there have never seen it. I don't know how you fix this thing up. I'm not sure how you guys fix this thing up. And this is nothing to do with anything other than leadership, Commissioner. That's why I want to touch on that one. And then let me take you, Commissioner, to, I don't know where to start. Let me start maybe on page 220, the 226, I think it is, on your report, because let me tell you. Let me take you to 226 on that report, Commissioner. because this is all about leadership. Your page 226 gives us a table of the consultants that you are using in this department. I did a rough calculation. Just on page 226 alone, there's probably 159 consultants at 1.3 million. Just on page 226, if you add up all those number of consultants, 159, and if you look at the next page, consultants use the donor funding, there's about 28. So we're talking, I don't know, 279, about 280 consultants. I'm raising it as you, Commissioner, because we've fought about outsourcing of correctional facilities in TPPs. Labandulaba are busy outsourcing this department. I'm raising it with you because when this department is run by so many consultants, this leadership of yours is outsourcing this department. And as hard as we fought about the PPPs, I'm saying to you guys, we're going to fight with you. There's no way that we can have 300 consultants running correctional. No way. That is outsourcing this department. And as the ANC, and certainly as this committee, it's going to be the last time that this thing is going to happen like that. It's almost to the tune, Commissioner, of 150 million rand. We're not talking about outsourcing of Bosasa and those type of people. We're talking just consultants. And that's the problem with leadership, Commissioner, that I want to talk to you about. Members will talk to you about other things. I'm just raising these issues. If you're going to get up one day, you're going to be very exposed. You know, if you look at, what's happening. If you look at that page 220, you take any one of them. You know, I didn't sleep last night, Commissioner. If you take, for instance, the moderator there, that one that says donor funds, 1, 2, 3, 4, but the first one says there was a moderator who worked for this department for 4 days, and we paid him on page 227. 227 of your annual report. We hired a moderator for 4 days, we paid him 359,000 rand for those 4 days. That's 90,000 rand a day for a moderator. 90,000 rand a day for a moderator. You don't know that, Commissioner, because you don't look at these things. I'm saying to you, your senior department are selling you out, and you're going to be in trouble. A plumber. You know, you've got a plumber learnership there. One guy, we had him for 12 months, we paid him 1 million rand. You know what does that mean? 83,000 rand a month. This chap that is going to teach people how to plumb. 83,000 rand a month. That's what it means. That's what the department paid him. 1 million rand for 12 months. 83,000 rand a month. We paid one person to train. And you said to us earlier, Jenny, Ms. Reiner, that part, or either you or the commissioner, part of the problem of the underspending was because we didn't have enough artisans. That is the excuse you use. We don't have enough artisans, but you're paying somebody 83,000 rand a month. So, Commissioner, I'm saying to you, in very serious tone, because I don't think you are aware of it, because it probably is too much for one guy, but your senior management are busy outsourcing and privatizing correctional services, and the portfolio committee is putting a stop to it today. We're not negotiating. It will never happen again that we're going to have this thing. I'm saying it to you today, it's not going to happen again. That we can have 300 people running around. Now, now, look at what you are doing, CFO. There's 300 people running around managing this office, this department. 300 people managing this department, and we're paying people bonuses of 18,000 rand a month. I'm sure one of the members is going to raise it here. We pay performance bonuses of 18,000 rand to permanent staff, but it's run by external staff. So, I'm just saying, Commissioner, that I think you seriously have to find a mechanism of dealing with your staff. I'm not going to talk on the IT matters because we have called them specifically, but I can tell you, Commissioner, that the consultation on your IT is horrendous. I asked myself what was that just now, but I think Ms. Shiner was saying to me it was a remand detention something. You spent 24.6 million rand last year. You spent 7.5 million rand this year. You come to us today and you say to us, it's been put on hold. After having spent 31 million rand, it's been put on hold. EDRM, I don't know what that is. We've spent 2.8 million rand last year. We spent 1.6 million rand this year. NCCS, what is NCCS? You've got the development of NCCS. System Development, NCC, I beg your pardon. National Contact Center. 13 million rand last year, 11 million rand this year. Somebody will have to explain to this department what is this National Contact Center, because I don't know that we are aware of it as the Portfolio Committee, but you spent 11 million rand on it this year, the current financial year. You spent 13 million rand on it that financial year. So I just wanted to highlight that in terms of how we outsourcing this department and commissioner, and you need to deal with it. The final issue I want to touch around leadership and then hand to members. If I take you to page 221, commissioner, and 222. Again, on all these matters, the reason why we asked for those divisions to come is because we will get into further detail with them. I'm raising them with you, commissioner, because maybe you'd want to come with them or send one of your trusted lieutenants so that you're on top of it. Let's just go to page this type of misconduct, for instance. On J, you've got on page 221, theft, bribery, fraud, corruption, and any of those any combination of those, there were 172 of them, okay? If you go over the page, fails to carry out lawful order, 224 individuals fails to follow instructions. You go to T, 50 people were sleeping on duty. You go down that very line, the next one, while on duty in possession of drugs. We will give you that information before you leave. Please don't go. Sexual misbehavior in Vietnam. Here you've got at least 14 of them, Commissioner Labantu. We keep them in our system. So I wanted to raise these things, Commissioner, because I think members will raise a specific one and say that as long as this is happening, there's no leadership in this department. We are outsourcing. We are allowing staff to get away with murder. And that is why I think everybody is querying the leadership part of it. I wanted to raise those things, Commissioner, because I really think you must deal with them. We will give you a report on the specific. DIU will come and explain what they are doing to us. IT will explain what they are doing to us in the coming weeks. But I thought, let me raise those up front and indicate that my major concern is the outsourcing of leadership. Never mind outsourcing of services. Outsourcing of leadership, because we don't want to act. I want to now allow members to participate. What we will do is, as we do it normally, Mr. Self, I recognize you. You'll have about 10 minutes. Ask questions, get a follow-up, and go as far as you can within about 10 minutes. We'll then go to Gwenya. We'll then go to Paliso. We'll then go to Advocat, and then we'll go to Makagula. So we'll allow you to engage with them for around about 10 minutes, and at the time, you'll come back again. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. Can I start by continuing where you left off around the outsourcing, and to say that if there was R1 million spent on a plumber, I thought that one of the places where we really needed intervention was in the employment of financial and related professional staff. Now, there's a 56.4% vacancy rate in that one area. It affects the quality of the financial control. It affects the quality of the annual report. It affects the quality of the Auditor General's report on the department. Now, can we know very specifically what concrete steps are being taken to fill the 56.4% vacancy rate in that particular department? But also on your point, Mr. Chairman, of the matter of officials who are not doing their jobs, or officials who are found guilty of misdemeanors. Every year, we hear from the department about the steps that are going to be taken to ensure that the security personnel are vetted. If I refer you to page 48, there are 2,478 vetted personnel in the department against 40,286 people who are not vetted in a security cluster department. And this is not the first time it's been raised. I can remember at least 4 years ago raising this issue. There was an explanation about how the Department of National Intelligence Agency and various other agencies were capacitating the department to do this work. And then they say, as the reason for the variance, major challenges were personnel shortages, vetting field workers, lacking of vetting record check systems, hence the reliance on the NIA for processing security clearance with long turnaround times. It's not new information. This has been years in the coming. I'll tell you another thing that's been years in the coming.
Before we do that, let them respond to these two, sir, and you get the others up. My fear is that we're going to lose them. Let them respond to these two, and you'll follow up. The issue around the vacancies in the finance and the betting issue. Somebody could just give us some sort of a response to those two.
Chairperson, while my colleagues are preparing perhaps an appropriate response, with respect to the vacancies that Honorable Mr. Self stated, especially on the specialized section, I should think we are on record in one of the meetings here where the CFO has indicated that the tendency in the department has been wherein we have seen people rise within the ranks. I want to emphasize, rise within the ranks of the years that you have spent, because you are able, literally one way or the other, to add 1 + 1 = 2, and you are able to deduct. People have been given positions in the finance area. And if I recall very well, in that meeting, he indicated that
with the recruitment of internships to deal with the asset verification, we are going to look with the best that we can afford within those young men and women to retain them in order to professionalize our specific areas, especially finance, human resource, wherein there is perfect science. Indeed, if we look at these chapters and members of the portfolio committee, we have inherited a system wherein professionalism was not the order of the day. And I cannot at this point in time say I will be able to deal with this matter effectively within 1 year. It's a process, because what it does, and exactly correctly as you say, it will affect our financial standing, it will affect the manner in which we report our financial capability. As an example, Chairperson, if you may allow to belabor this point, you need to have at the regional level, in each region, wherein expect capability in terms of finance is recruited. Because if we at regional level are unable to have people who understand finance, lo and behold, that will not be able to have the figures that we want to have in terms of regional configuration. So it's a challenge that we are aware of, and it's a challenge that we accept that we need to professionalize our organization. If we're going to go back in terms of recruiting people internally, because by the years that they've spent within the organization, they're able to do what we think they're capable, it will not be able to do that. And I want to put it on record that the Chief Financial Officer himself has been going to all the regions himself to be able to do an assessment on the ground on the capability of the section that he runs. This we can prove, but honestly, as you rightly say, yes, it's a challenge that we accept, and it's a problem that we need to solve as quickly as possible. I'm saying in terms of the recruitment processes which are run within his area and corporate services, we need to have a standard procedure of recruitment of people with requisite skills. This we have said, but I want to assure you that it's not a quick win now, but certainly it's something that you are bringing to our attention, which we have taken note of. The Chief Financial Officer will respond to this matter. In terms of page 48 that you are referring to in terms of vetting, this is a headache, this is an Achilles heel, and it's an albatross on our neck. I would like to believe when we joined this organization, so it has been an issue for a number of years, so it's something that has calcified within the organization. But what we are saying, for the current staff that has come through, some vetting is taking place. But it will be a long haul for us to be able to vet everybody. And we have said this, and we have agreed with the chairperson that it's not going to be an easy thing. It is well and good for us to cast a statement and say it's national intelligence. It's easy for us to put blame across. But the dependence that we have in terms of the expertise that resides in this, we can do what is called first-line checking. But vetting as a principle resides with the national intelligence. So we are doing everything possible, and I can assure you that I also spend sleepless nights, because if you have a number of people who are not vetted and they flout your security principles, there is no war that you're going to win if you have that type of people. All these misdemeanors that we're talking about, sleeping people sleeping on duty, people falsifying, it's because we have been able. Let me go back. In the case which we want to talk about, we recruited about 2,000 young men and women last year. And we discover that among those, 62 or 80 of them were a security risk. And we were quick enough to go and deal with that matter, because we were dealing with what you call first-hand and first-line security checking. But to deal with the 40,000 that we have, I want to raise here that I am not going to put my head on the block and say next year everybody will be vetted. But we'll make every means possible and available to us, because we have a unit that is run by Ms. Matijiza, am I right? So we are also trying to beef up that unit. But certainly I agree with you, in a security cluster and a security unit like us, that work should have done some time back. So there has been lethality for a number of years, and lo and behold, it falls on us now, and we need to be accountable for that. And certainly I would like to assure this unit that we are not taking this matter as light, and we are not laughing at it, and it does not make us proud. It's something that we'd like to put behind our backs, but I should think I can assure this committee that this is what we'll deal with as we go forward. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. I'd just like to really suggest that if you are looking for financial professionals, then I would have thought that around about this time of the year, you should be on every single campus of every university in South Africa with a recruitment table trying to find the people to fill those vacancies. But let me get on to the next matter, if I may. I really need to understand what the problem is around the shift system, because during the last number of years, so over the last 5 years, the personnel establishment, the filled, the warm bodies in uniform in the department, have grown from about 32,000 people to about 41,500 people. And at the same time, everybody complains that there are not enough warm bodies in the fills and looking after people in the correctional centres. And if you look at the staff vacancy rates, the staff vacancy rates are really not, and I refer here on page 201, the staff vacancies are at their lowest at the area of security. So if I understand it correctly, that's not where the problem lies. The problem lies in high-level specialists, it lies in medical professionals, it lies in a variety of other areas. It does not lie in making sure that there are warm bodies actually attending to their job. And that speaks also to the to your point, Chair, where you drew attention to misconduct. And I refer here on page 222 under item L, absence or repeated absence from work without a valid reason or permission, 1,418 cases. Now, those are people who don't pitch up for work in common language. Now, I want to know what is the problem with the shift system, because it doesn't seem to be on the supply side. There seems to be a management problem, and I'd like that unpacked. Another thing that I'd just like to raise is the whole question of electronic monitoring, which is another thing that every year we hear it's coming on track. And one of the stakeholders said yesterday that there's not enough commitment by the department to non-custodial sentences. And one of the reasons for that is that the magistrates and judges have no confidence in, basically, in community corrections, and one of the reasons that they have no confidence in it is that the department can't track probationers and parolees. So I would like to know what specific progress has been made and when can we expect this matter to arrive at finality. Finally, if I might just relate to the assaults that occur. And we heard yesterday, and I agree with the observation, that we don't have management information here around assaults relating to what type of assaults there were. Were they offender on offender? Were they staff on offender? Were they offender on staff? And all that sort of thing. But really, it has gone up. Ms. Shine has talked about various interventions that have been made. Well, I'd like to know what exactly the interventions are that has that will result in a reduction in assaults, more particularly given the recent publicity and the very large newspaper advertisements around our handling of the case in St. Albans and the alleged human rights violations that occurred there in violation of the Convention Against Torture, to which we are a signatory. Thank you.
May I just add to this, then I don't have to ask the same question. Just to follow up on the Honourable Member Self's comments, page 23 of your annual report, you will see in 2003-2004, it was already, there was already a need for approximately 60,000 posts in correctional services. And then you can read through it, and then at the last paragraph or last sentence,
in the same paragraph states that the projected funding is 41,500 and the actual staffing level of 40,953 as of 31st of March 2010. Now, you know, I assume that the inmate capacity already increases since then, and we are still about 20,000 less personnel. Then, with regard to your specialized services, page 27, there's a list of social workers, the understaffing percentages. How is this possible? Does this add also to what the honorable member said? And then in your own statement on page 108, your the National Commissioner statement, you mentioned in your own words that the inadequate staffing levels for the implementation of the shift system and the migration of officials to center-based positions have had negative impact on the operations within the department. And it follows, the shortage of personnel has meant that in various places officials are overstretched, and this has led to a number of unintended consequences, in particular an increase in absenteeism. So, and then the following page 109 is your senior or top management which were suspended, dismissed, and who resigned. So just to add on that personnel issue, your response on those things. Thanks.
Chairperson, the colleagues will respond to the others in terms of shifts and assaults. Let me quickly speak about electronic monitoring. Electronic monitoring, we've indicated that it's not a panacea to the problems that we have, and neither do you want to use it as an excuse. It has been spoken before we came here, and we want to emphasize that the process has begun. We have had the benchmarking process, international tours, studies. We have now a tender that was advertised officially in the newspapers. Companies have already submitted their proposal, and I would like, therefore, to request that we don't deal with it because it's something that we need to solve. The timelines in terms of the bid evaluation, bid adjudication, certainly we're talking about practical issues. The setting up of the bid evaluation committee, the adjudication, and finally the appointment of a service provider in that field. So I would like to say that the process is on course. I would like, therefore, to request that that question be raised with us at the end of this at the end of the year, so that we can give you a sense as to where we are, who may be, because I'm not privy as to which companies have participated, because we want to follow the process of governance and clear process of handling this matter professionally. So we can assure you that the process is on. So it is going to take place under my leadership, that I can assure you. So the matter is being dealt with.
Commissioner, just help us more. I think the timelines are important. We're 5 months away from the financial year end. I think the question that we'd want to know is that by the end of this financial year, would we have agreed on the service provider or service providers? Would we have rolled out, even if it is just a prototype or a pilot type of thing? I think that's the question that we're asking, because that gives us a sense that the overcrowding matter will be addressed with. So our question is, within the next 5 months, can you assure us that at least the adjudication of the tender would have been sorted out and that there would be a pilot run somewhere? Is that possible?
Chairperson, let me say this. Yes, the identification of a service provider will be identified. May I quickly hasten to indicate that the ability of the service provider to roll out will be also be dependent on the support that he or she, that company, has in terms of the IT capability, which is what we are ramping up. because electronic monitoring by its nature means you have good basis for your IT purposes. And I would like to believe, subject to other things happening, that we would like to have a rollout by the end of the financial year. Some form of a pilot should have and must have taken place. That's the ideal that we have. And that's the plan that we have on the table, Chairperson.
Subsystem and assault.
Chairperson, I would like to give feedback with regards to assaults. We really acknowledge as the department that we have really increased the number of assaults in the past financial year. But we also like to indicate that we are also paying attention in the light of the fact that the scope of the definition of assault was very, very narrow. So we have expanded, we have broadened the scope of assault, which includes alleged assault, as well as different categories of assault, namely inmates on inmates, official on inmates, and inmates on official. And we have therefore introduced some strategies to ensure that environments where inmates could also report this alleged assault. So these strategies include aspects such as improved complaints procedures, identification and separation of vulnerable inmates, and separation of complaints from perpetrators of violence in order to have a more conducive environment for offenders and our system in the department. So in future, we'll be able to report on those categories that I've mentioned of assaults, so that we're able, you know, to try to eradicate the number of assaults that we have in the department.
We don't want you to report on the assaults. The question that we are really asking is, what are you doing? One assault is one assault too many. Convince us what it is that you are doing to stop those assaults, because maybe Mr. Stout should have put it to you bluntly. Assaults, as Ms. Ngwenya said yesterday, happen after hours, most of them. After hours, you have a skeleton staff. When your official is down there, you don't even hear what's happening on the side. How are you going to eradicate that? I think that's the question that we're asking. The fact that the numbers are going up is indicative that there's a problem. And ours is not to interrogate the numbers that are going up. We are saying to you, this problem that we have. What are the steps? We have our ideas. We want to hear from you if you've got any ideas of fixing up the problem. We agree there'll never be a zero assault. But what are you doing to manage the process? Yes, sir.
Chairperson, this question really needs a principled response. Let me say this to the chairperson and the portfolio committee members. Assaults in their nature indicate laxity in terms of security measures in place. But what is very important here is that assaults in the main is an indication of poor management on our side. Also, we need to accept that. But at the same time, the increase of assaults also is correlated to the increase in overcrowding in our facilities. I should think we need to take cognizance of that. In an environment where in the more people, you find a level of irritability also increasing. And with the shortage of staff, that also exacerbates the problem. Chairperson, members of the portfolio committee, I don't think we have one simple response to this. And I would like, therefore, to request your indulgence and also provide us with assistance, because we're into this together. And I don't think we need to be afraid to accept counseling from yourselves. But the issue of staff shortages is one, but the increase of overcrowding in our facility also has a correlated effect to it. Measures that we may put in place may also help to alleviate. I should think we need to move away from a band-aid approach, where we just put a band-aid and find what you call sustainable processes that will help us to deal with this matter. So we're dealing with two things at the same time, overcrowding, at the same time, there's what you call staff shortages. But in the same time, we need to be able to look at measures that will help us to mitigate and reduce the level of assaults. Because assaults in their nature, which means that people are getting hurt in the process. I know, Chairperson, without second guessing, there's an issue that was discussed here openly with us, that we need to be looking at CCTVs. If that is the issue, I should think that should be open for debate and discussion, and that public discourse be part of the whole process. So that much as ideas are put forward and we are able to see as to the impact this will have. But I can assure you from what I've seen in terms of assaults in the reports that I see on a monthly basis, it's centers that are overcrowded that you have a lot of assaults taking place. And that happens after our the day shifts that have occurred, Chairperson.
Follow up, because it also, I mean, the Commissioner talked about irritability, and one of the irritability factors of, I believe, happens at Christmas time, and that's when they kick in Operation Vala. And it was told to us yesterday by the Judicial Inspectorate that during the time that Operation Vala is in progress, the independent correctional centre visitors are prohibited from coming into the centre, and that then prohibits them from acting against alleged assaults. I want to know whether that's true.
Please respond, but you know, the overriding matter, I'm talking to all of you, is that we are signatories to International Treaty on Torture and so on. So it doesn't matter that we're sitting and grappling with it here. The reality is that we are breaking that treaty, so we have to find answers. Assault is just one. When I say just one, I'm saying it's what we're discussing here and having a challenge. The real challenge is that there's a treaty that we are breaking every day. And that is the real issue that Mr. Self and stakeholders, I think, are raising. That yes, assault, whether it's inmate on inmate, inmate on of staff, official on staff, those things are fine. We are breaking an international treaty, and the question is, how do we resolve that thing? How do we ensure that there's no torture in our facilities? Because as long as there's assault, you can rest assured there will be some sort of torture. So that is the important thing that we are asking you guys, and it's become urgent. We can't talk about this thing for the next 5 years. Our term ends in 2 years' time. You guys have to come and tell us what you're doing in 2 years. You have to, guys. In our term, we need to know that these are the steps that we're putting in place, because otherwise we have shot ourselves in the foot, Commissioner, by signing a treaty that is unimplementable in South Africa. Do you want to respond to that?
Chairperson, on the last issue that the Honourable Member of Portfolio Committee, Mr. Self, has indicated that during Operation Vala, we don't allow the inspectorate to visit. I should think it's something that I'll investigate, because they are our partners. And therefore they'll be able to give us a sense. I don't want to criticize my colleagues here, but certainly it's something that we're going to look at now after this meeting as to find the reasons why. Because if there are stakeholders like the Portfolio Committee, even when you are in recess, you still represent Parliament, you may want to go and visit a facility. And I find it very strange that we can limit their scope and movement in this respect. As long as they indicate that they're going, they can pitch up at any center, because we know them. They're part of the institution. They're part of the oversight that they do. I just want to indicate that I don't want to make a cover-up for this, but we'll find out as to the reasons leading to that, because it smacks of we're trying to make a cover-up, and we want to be as open as possible on this matter. I should think I have responded to that particular point, Chairperson.
Chairperson, I'm going to try briefly to deal with it, but I do want to just flag for the Portfolio Committee that this is one of the outstanding issues that we were meant to have a dedicated and detailed discussion on, that got put on hold because of the negotiation process. And I think that we need to put it back on the agenda.
Let's ask the question, because we did do that. Is that negotiation process advanced to a stage where we can have this discussion? Has it advanced to the stage where we can call you guys and have the discussion? Because if it has, we will be doing a disservice by just answering that question in 5 minutes. We'd rather call a session, even if it's next week, to have it. But
Can you indicate if you're ready to come and see us on that?
Yes, that's just in a weekend away because...
Mr. South, with that helps you, we were slotted in as we slotted in the others, maybe, because it is an important matter. Mamgwenya?
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I will start with care on page 60. Chairperson, the report is misleading us in terms of the figure. It says the target for the year under review was 65,000 offenders where the actual performance was 134,358 offenders. It's page 60. Yes. It says here, offenders here, Chairperson, it says it's 134. Actually, it's 134,358 offenders participated in the social worker program for the year of 2010 and 2011. But Chairperson, it's continued to say the facilities are roundly 112,000. It's contradicting, Chair. If we've got 134, but in the facility, we've got 112,000. Under care, again, Chair.
Are you following? Yes, and 112 was there, ma'am.
112 is the offenders that are in our centers. It's 112,000. But if we've got 135,000, that means we've got more than people that we have in our center. So that's why I said it's contradicting. I want the department to clarify that. And also the report on care, again, is not clear on regard of the inmate that have been tested. In terms of the presentation of Babu Sokhele, Chairperson, it's a serious concern. And it is shocking to hear that an amount of 2.9 million was written off, which was as a result of loss of the state vehicles. The annual report indicated that money was shifted from all other programs to administration, and in particular to patients' vehicles. Money is taken from more disabling programs to buy vehicles that are being misused by officials. And an amount of 2.9 million is written off. I want to clarify on this here. What is being done to officials who misuse and damage the state vehicles? Not a, I'm worried because we always, in this committee, we are fair enough for the department. Out of all the departments that we have in Parliament, we as correctional service, we never even one day go in Parliament and say we are not going to pass this budget. But if we are going to continue to get reports like this, I think Chair, we are going to refuse to pass the budget. Maybe the department will understand what it is committee work is. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Somebody from the department, deal with the issue on page 60 and then on the state write-offs. And either, whichever one first, it doesn't matter.
Thank you, Chairperson.
I'll deal with the issue on page 60, which gives the number of people who participated in social work programs. I need to clarify to the committee that for social work programs, both people that are on remand and those that are sentenced do have access to social work programs. So the figure includes even the remand detainees. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson and the Honourable Member. The question from the Honourable Member saying, what have we done to those staff members who damaged their vehicles? Chairperson, to be honest, I never seen any sanction since I started in this department. Through my presentation, I stated very clearly to say we are revising this policy. We are issuing the circular now. What will happen in order for anyone who will be able to damage these vehicles? Because I can foresee that the people are running away with matter in this case. Let me make an example, Chairperson. That's why I want to qualify why I'm saying since I started, I never seen anything. You find that the file comes, and then the file says this thing needs to be written off. But if you get into the bottom of it, you'll find yourself that, no, in fact, this thing is not supposed to be written off. In fact, it should be more than this. In fact, the written off was supposed to be more than this, plus or minus about 10 million. Because some of these files, we send it back to where it comes from, to the region, to say, you guys, you need to investigate further in terms of this, and then give me the sanctions. What are you going to do in terms of the people that are smashing the car? Let me make an example, Honorable Member. The files that are coming for the written off, you find that the case was open, the car was damaged, and the case was open on a different number plate where, in terms of the itinerary. Why you go deeper to say, but which case that is registered there? When you start in follow up with the police station, you find that the case has been withdrawn. But in terms of the file that is coming for the CFO to recommend the written off, it's been recommended all the way from the region. That is the challenges that one is facing. It's really a challenge. That's why we are saying I needed to issue this circular to say what needs to be done in order for us, because people, the thing that has been used is saying the driver got all the rights because the management approved the driver to use this car. But when you look at it, there is a lot of loopholes around that. It's really, Honorable Member, it is a challenge. That's why we are going to issue this circular in order to ensure that definitely there will be a sanction in terms of that. People, they're not going to get away with murder. Thanks.
Before you answer, let us add it to it. Is the commissioner going to be a performance indicator against the CFO? Because 10 million rand can't be allowed to be. And I think that because he is indicating that he's going to write a circular, there has to be a sanction on him if this thing doesn't carry on, because there's no other incentive. So my question to you is, or my recommendation, is that we want to see a performance indicator on the CFO's contract that says he must manage downwards the abuse of state vehicles. Number two, CFO, when you write that circular, can you copy Cindy in that circular so that when we go into oversight, we are aware that when we find a vehicle sitting in Westbury at the flats, I'll take you to the flats in Westbury. These people that are supposed to be doing our visits, but Carless 14 with our car. So we want that circular so that every member can have that circular that knows that this is it. We'll be able to say to you, car XYZ, Vincent Smith was driving it, there's it, and gosh. Because we're not going to carry on like this anymore. Send us the circular, and we will distribute it to everybody else. And please, is it possible to put that on his performance contract? Do you want to talk on this one?
Chairperson, the CFO mentioned a very serious thing, and that is the number plating. It's a fraudulent thing, because they deliberately open a case just to get authorization to request a return of that particular asset. So if it was found, my question is now, what did you do in those cases, instances? What happened to those people? Because it's criminal, and also departmental. So it's a very serious and a deliberate action.
Chairperson,
I want to do the follow-up on Babu Sokele in terms of the time frame of that circular. Thank you.
Chairperson, allow me with a comment to go back to your comments, the first opening statement on leadership. I really want to, because this is linked to leadership. When you say some of these things are happening, this, and you quoted classical real-time issues from the document that you presented to yourself, and also want to predicate as to what the CFO has said in relation to the damaging of state assets and measures put in place. And when he said openly that sanctions were not in place when we joined this organization, if they were there, they were not privy to that. I want to indicate here that this organization is as old as so many years. And therefore, there is a very entrenched culture of concealment of information. It's not us here, but there's a culture that is there, deep-rooted, of cover-ups. And where information is selectively given to us in order to make us as if things are happening. Perhaps what the CFO, for me to add to what he said, if a car is damaged, and the explanation that he gave, there is a scam that has been taking place within the organization. Because if the car is damaged and there are these things of changing number plates, you're selling a car that might not be as seriously damaged. And also you sit into those committees, who sits, perhaps we may go deeper as to who sits in the committees wherein the write-offs are made and what decisions are taken, which ones. There are classical cases here which we came to understand when we joined that some of the cars that were sold in auction, in actual fact, they were not as seriously damaged. And they were bought by the same people who, for their own benefits, there's money-making schemes here. So, Chairperson, what I'm saying is that much as I accept the criticism and chastising us, this leadership is not about accepting corruption. It will take us time to be able to put things. We are putting our hands on deck. Because if the CFO can commit and indicate that there is these issues, and we're talking about them openly, it means that there is corruption that has been there, and the people are trying their luck. And it cannot succeed in the sense that because we speak, we see, and we try to devise measures. But that tide is coming to an end in the sense that this leadership must therefore pledge that it's not working against the very same leadership that wants to fight corruption. Chairperson, concealment here is a big thing. If I may go back on the newspaper, I should think the Sunday Times indicated that there was somebody who left the organization in Leocop. It was a big article. There was a report, none of us sitting here were privy to that report. Precisely because it has certain intentional reasons for information to be concealed, and therefore it is about us as members to be physically walk the talk, visit the centers, and visibility. If we are going to be sitting in our office and expect reports, I've said to this team, we'll not be able to win that battle of understanding what is happening in the organization. We need to be streetwise, we need to take the cudgels out and fight. Things are not going to be easy for us here.
So you're fighting a contingent of people who want to see us fail. And these are some of the issues. You have mentioned the number of consultants in the organization. Chairperson, we inherited this mess. And it is our duty to clean this mess. And we should show cost to yourselves that this mess shall be dealt with. But there is no way that we are going to have a short-term remedy to it. You'll get a report from the IT unit on this matter. 160,000, 160 people working in the... It's unacceptable. Now, I'm saying the issue of performance indicator for the CFO, Chairperson, that will be always changing the performance contract of all my senior managers. Because every time we find out something, I'll have to include it. But I should think it is fair enough for me to say, on the bona fides of my colleagues here, if they're able to see problems, they should raise it to me, because I'll be changing those contracts on a continuous basis. Because every time I discover things, but I can say to you, I need to put confidence in my leadership and the team that I work with. Otherwise, it means every time I should micromanage them on something that is always creeping up. But I'm saying the onus falls on their conscience. If they want me to succeed, we succeed together as a collective. That's what I want to say, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. In the bypass, before I raise my questions, Dr. Sokela, clarity that is there already a policy that you have developed, or are you going to develop a policy? Because according to the annual report, there are rewards for official commissioner, huge rewards. So people are rewarded for doing damage in the organization, and it's not acceptable, not at all. Is there a policy already developed for the vehicle thieves? There is no other word. It's thieves in the department. It's not corruption, but it's thieves. Now to my question. If you can answer me, first before I continue.
The question is...
Are you wrong at that?
Thank you, Chairperson. As I indicated that we're going to issue a circular, I've got a copy of that circular as I'm speaking. So that with that circular, we want to start distributing to all the region from tomorrow. So that the reason why we want to distribute it, because 6 months is already gone. We want to correct everything within the 6 months. We got the copy here, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I am coming to Mrs. Schreiner. In your presentation, how do you set up your target? Is it based on previous performance figures or what? My concern is that in the presentation, you were comparing your figures with the previous financial year. But you did not indicate whether you achieved your target or not. For example, on victim involvement in parole hearing, you mentioned that for 2010-2011, there were 253 recorded cases as compared to 83 cases recorded in the previous financial year. That was for Mrs. Schreiner. Again to you, Dr. Sokela, to your presentation. Most of your underspending is as a result of compensation of employees because positions are not filled and you cannot attract other professionals, such as psychologists. One, how often do you apply counter offers for those who resign? What measures are in place to attract scarce skills and professionals like social workers and psychologists? I am asking this.
this organization for the offenders needs social workers and psychologists. If we say we want to rehabilitate, if we say we want to give care to offenders, then you must have the relevant remedies in place. And it's not scarce in our country. There are a professional recruitment system in place in this country. So to us, it's not acceptable whether what you are going to answer, but it's not acceptable that DCF cannot attract. There is no measures, because we were hammering on this for the whole year. Still, we are talking about this in the annual report. Why are you not using the money, you understand, to attract professionals? And what is happening with the OSD for psychologists? May I continue, sir?
Chairperson, on the first one, let me start with the question of how we set the targets. It is critically important that the targets are set on the previous year baseline, because that's, in essence, what we're aiming to do, is to be able to improve service delivery against that baseline. But it's also important that in setting a target, we look at the ability to be able to deliver on that. And that is a process that we conduct on the basis of our mid-year review. So now in October, November, we take the second quarter report and we look at to what extent have we been able to achieve the targets that we've set ourselves, try to understand what are the nature of challenges if we haven't been able to meet those targets, so that our targets for the next year are realistic. Because otherwise one can mechanically just set increasing targets. Realistically, you don't have the staffing to get there, so it needs to be done on that basis. And that's done starting from management area level, moving up to regional level. The regions then join together with the national office branch to be able to evaluate how far we've gone, what are the challenges, what do we need to put in place in order to be able to raise our targets. I think in relation to...
Now, Ms. Hanna, before you carry on, let's ask this question, because, again, I'm thinking on my feet. You know, if you're saying you set your target on the basis of what you achieved the previous year, if that previous year was a lean year in terms of your performance, it was a terrible year in terms of your performance, you're setting your targets on that, then we can't be moving forward. Because you're saying you're setting your targets on the basis of what you achieved 5 years. I'm not disputing what you're doing. All I'm saying is it should not be blanket that way, because it will create problems for you. It should be, under normal circumstances, best practice, but because we don't have best practices, surely there should be an increment. Because I'm just looking at Sokela, we can't set our target on the 2.9 million write-off last year. You can't. You see, so I'm saying, I think that is why the question is being raised, that when you set your target, that it was raised by stakeholders, let us say, that these targets should really be intended to make us improve, as opposed to get us wherever we were last year or 2 years ago. Because then you don't even perform, then you don't even deserve a performance bonus. So I think that is the nature of the question.
Chairperson, thank you for that. And I certainly don't want to be read to be saying that it's simply based on last year's performance. If you look at the APP, we've got targets set already for a three-year process. The mid-year review is aiming to be able to say, if you look at our delivery in this year, at the mid-year, is the targets that we've set ourselves in the APP realistic? Now, if we're more or less achieving those targets, then yes, it's realistic. If we're overachieving those targets, then we increase the targets going forward. So it's a complex process, but it needs to go hand in hand with your resourcing strategy. It may well be that we're able to say mid-year, we are not reaching this target, but if we resource differently, we will be able to meet the targets going forward. So those are the processes that take place in the mid-year review. If you look at the victim representation, the targets that we set ourselves are very decidedly aiming to stretch that, to really be able to lift it very significantly, because the level at which we were performing was significantly low. We didn't in that year reach the 265 that was our target, we reached 253. In comparison to 83, it's a significant advance, but we didn't achieve what we need to do. So that's where in the APP going forward, we've set ourselves significant targets to be able to try and increase that. But again, measuring that against the number of parole cases that are taking place, Whereas previously we'd set it simply as an absolute figure. But I think the complexity of target setting is well known.
Chairperson, I will try to answer this, although it falls under the ambit of the corporate services. But in terms of the counter-offer, the department does counter-offer for those who are leaving the department. But you will counter-offer within that band. If the person was in the band of the assistant director and get a promotional to be a deputy director to another department, then you don't have a position, no matter how you like to keep that position, a person, you don't have a position of the deputy director, then you can't do anything on that one. But the department does counter offer in order to retain the organizational memory. In terms of the scale, the department really tried by all means to attract the scale. I will make an example in this committee. I think it's about two times when I talked about the division or the directorates that were not there. Most especially in terms of the internal control and the compliance unit, of which it needs a specialized skill, which is the professional, where you need a person who serves the articles, the person who might be able to be operating at the level of a senior audit manager, in order to make sure that those compliances get adhered to. We went all out to make sure that we will get a person who's professional, who got all those qualifications, and then we managed to get a person. The reason being, we will never ever achieve, I would like to assure the members, you will never ever achieve without having the people who got the necessary skill, the correct skill. So the department is going all out there. If it needs to be for the person not starting from the minimum notch, depending what that person is getting, where it comes from, through the negotiation process, then we can get that person and start with us. But the department is trying to get a necessary professional skill. Thank you, Shepard.
Who's in charge of HR? Are you in charge of them? Let's try and help you. You know, these stakeholders of ours work with these people in the day. Part of the problem are the working conditions. If I'm a nurse or a doctor or whatever, and I'm one and I'm working with 3,000 people, I just leave, even if you pay me. I just leave. So you're not going to solve this problem, as you were saying, by Elastoband. We have to find a way of changing it. I mean, you've got a 51% psychologist vacancy. You've got a 56% finance. You've got social workers. All those where it becomes very clear that the working conditions are not what you would get if you worked in the public sector, in the private sector. People leave. So I'm saying, Commissioner, we have to find a way, especially in correctional services. Whether it's the teachers, whether it's the psychologists or psychiatrists or all those people, even if you took all that money back that you underspent by this year and you found all those people, they won't last 6 months. So you're not solving the problem. That I'm asking, who's HR? Maybe you must come to us with a retention strategy that is not just about money, but it's about sorting out all these other problems. Because it's very difficult to be working with these type of people day in and day out, and you're a young nurse or you're a young doctor, go to Amtata, for instance. There's a young doctor that was working in Amtata. I don't think that lady will last. So I think at HR you guys must do things differently. We can't do the same thing every year, throw money to the problem and think it's going to be resolved. Well,
Chairperson, I should think work as a collective here. My HR colleague was going to respond. I should think on the question that was raised here as to what measures are we putting in place to attract scarce skills, psychologists, social workers, and the same would have been adequately been responded by my CDC, Development and Care. We have gone all out as an organization to establish relationships with institutions, tertiary institutions. We have signed, I should think, last month with a non-governmental organization, tertiary, wherein we solicit what you call internship, for example, University of South Africa, MEDUNSA, and the rest. Because that is where the pool is. But at the same time, the department is competing with other government departments and other institutions. Those skills are very scarce, and we have a very low base in terms of the numbers. So there is a competing needs within everybody, both private and public sector. But indeed, members of the board, we're not sitting with our arms folded. We've gone into that because we think, and sincerely so, that once we get into relationship with such institutions, they should be able to say, for internships, these numbers are going to correctional services, because universities exist across the spectrum of the country, and therefore they should be allocated. But over and above that is the retention strategy that we're talking about. Once they've finished their internship, we should be in a position to see how we pitch the remuneration in respect to the competing agencies outside. Because they gain skills with Department of Correctional Services, and then they leave. So, rightly so, as you say, Chairperson, is a retention strategy that will be able to be robust and to be able to create some sort of comfort that we're able to attract these skills that we've been able to bring within the organization. So my colleagues were going to, because that we foresaw coming, and we started working on this particular strategy as to how to attract first the required skills, and then of course retain it medium long term. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, my follow-up question will be, in government, one doctor looks after a day 40 people. I think that is what the chairperson was giving clarity on. In DCS, if we are talking about the retention policy, already I think it is developed. Does it really reflect that if you've got one doctor, is this doctor going to look after 1,000 offenders? Or what is the target? Just give me that. So that we, because there is a problem, people will go with me. I will not go and do a social worker to 3,000. I will not. Because there are better offers for doing that. There is a target in government. And I think DCS is part of government. Just give me that clarity.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I wanted to remind, I'm sorry because Commissioner was sick last week at Kimberley. You know that center is new, but we were shocked. There were two professional sisters, no doctors at all. And if you can look how many inmates that are there, it shows that there is a problem. I want to say to the commissioner that if there is a plan, it must be quick. Because really, we are not doing anything. If we do, that's why today I didn't want to talk about parole. Chairperson, I was focusing on care because I see that always we talk about parole, overcrowding. We are not talking about care, some of us are or the hotel, but today we are going to be doctors. Maybe if we talk more about care, then the department also takes serious about care. It's a serious commissioner. Issue, the one that we're talking about. This department needs to improve in terms of that. No one we are going to attract as long as you don't have a target of a person, like how many people that are going to serve. Even in our members that are working there, it still is a challenge. You find a member is looking after 500 people, and in that center, I mean, or block or whatever you call, you find that there are two. So management need to do something. We need to have management a plan ayo ecabangayo kangcono ngama center ethu. Ngiyabonga Chairperson.
Before you respond, Commissioner, just one. We had this discussion yesterday and a debate yesterday with stakeholders, and I think Ms. Hanna, you spoke about the suicide rate or whatever. And those that are cleverer than us in this committee were suggesting that because of the lack of this at least once a week consultation of a depressed inmate or that type of thing, because he can't get that, it leads to suicide. So that is why this thing is urgent for us. Whether it's natural or unnatural death, you know, if we are not supplying the service, we might have to reconsider whether this is a natural death or an assisted death or something. I mean, if you don't give the necessary, we know if he doesn't get this, he's going to commit suicide. We deprive him of that. We are also complicit in this thing by omission. That's the seriousness about it. That's why we're saying that when you respond or when you come up with your strategy, it doesn't have to be today, but please consider that when we talk about these things, we look at it as deeply as that. That is why we bring our stakeholders here and ask them, is this thing just about not having nurses, or is it deeper than that? And the deeper part is that our suicide rates could be reduced drastically by inmates just having the ability to go and talk to a consultant. They don't have to go to Sterkfontein or wherever, just to be counseled. So that is the urgency, and that is the importance that this leadership must understand. And that is why we are pushing it, as Mamgwenya said today, that for us it's a very important matter. I don't know if you want to comment, but there was the question of, is there a standard in terms of how many patients per doctor in government and so on?
Yes, Chairperson. There are specific norms for the various categories, but because of the challenges that we have, that have been exacerbated by all the things that the committee talked about, like the migration and the chronic shortage that we are experiencing, we are unable to actually meet those. But we take a note of what you said, and we will definitely come up with a retention strategy that talks to all those issues, especially around the working conditions. Like you rightfully said, Chairperson, we can't just throw money at this and hope that it will be the panacea for all the challenges that we have. Thank you.
Can you give us the benchmark where you're at currently, so that when we visit you or when you visit us quarterly, we are able to say, but look guys, you're moving further away from, we accept that you're not there now because of the challenges, but the worst case scenario is that it must at least stay there, it can't get wider. Because if it gets wider, then it means we're doing something wrong. So if you guys would be able to say to us, ideally, government needs one social worker per 1,000, we're currently sitting with one social worker per 5,000, and we'll be able to monitor that going forward. If you guys could give us that to Cindy, please, at some point, before the next quarterly meeting. Okay. Do you want to add, ma'am, yeah? No, that's what I'm saying. Continue.
I still got two questions. Page 40 on your annual report. 40. Yeah. The report mentioned that funding beds for image turnaround was declined by National Treasury. DCS must indicate how much was requested from Treasury and why was the bid declined by Treasury. The report also mentioned on page 33 that all approved OSDs have been implemented. It will be useful for the department to report on which OSDs has not been approved, if any, and what are the stumbling blocks in approving those. That's my question.
Paliso, can I request that the second question, the OSD one, because it's linked to the shift that we discussed, I don't only have the shift one. Is that fine? But if you could answer the first part of the question, the image turnaround, why has National Treasury refused it on page 40?
Can I?
Yes, anybody?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. During the NTF process for the 2010 NTF, which means it is in July 2009, we submitted this to National Treasury, and to be specific to the question asked, the image turnaround strategy, the amount that we are requesting for the 2010 NTF, which was 8.2 for 2010, 13.4 2011, and 11 million for 2012-13, but it was during 2009 for 2010 NTF. And it is that year that we're implementing, if you recall, Honorable Chair, the different OSDs in the department, and we requested quite a substantial amount to implement the various OSDs, including the main OSDs, the OSD for correctional officials. So what had happened, as much as we had submitted those bids originally, there was a process of reviewing our submissions due to the amount of money that we were requesting from the sisters. So we then had a second submission of the NTF to National Treasury, where we then withdrew all the other bids except the bids for implementing the various OSDs, which is for correctional officials, phase one and phase two, and the teachers, social workers, and so forth. So those bids were, I know for 2010-11, we were wanting 1.7 billion. Overall, over 3 years, we wanted 5.7 billion for the different OSDs with the carry-through effects on the salary bill of the department. So effectively, we need to maybe clarify that we did originally submit, but it was pulled back due to prioritizing the main OSDs for implementing, I mean, the main bids for implementing OSDs in the department. So it's not that maybe Treasury just said no.
I'm trying to, Chairperson, I'll pack it for when we discuss the ship.
Yes.
Chair, page 28, the grievances, that links up with what you said earlier on about the working conditions. I would like to know what is, from those grievances, what is the generic problem which they raise in those grievances? Because out of those grievances, you can establish what is really wrong and what bothers the general workforce. And then on page 31, you talk about the proposals in your second column. The following shift patterns have been proposed for implementation. What is the status of that particular proposal, given the fact that the shortage of staff as well as the unhappiness of the labor force, unions, organized labor with regard to those? And then page 47, you mentioned about under-reporting of assaults. Now, my question is, how did you determine those, that there was an under-reporting? You know, you say that you mentioned less than the target, and then your actual, and then your reason for variances is an under-reporting. Then also your inmate labor. I don't have the page now, but there's a clear indication that there's a decrease and from working offenders. And does it also maybe as a result of your artisans, which is not, on staff? And then my last one is the staff that is now in terms of the AG report. The staff debt has been outstanding for more than 3 years. You know, there's an amount, if I'm correct, 2.8 million. How is it possible that those monies are not collected from the staff after such a long time? And if you look at the amount, 142,000, 167,000, 222,000, Is it loans which you people get from these under expenditure or what? Or how did it happen that that they get into debt to the department in that fashion? Thanks.
Chairperson, you know, if one looks at the explanation that is given here as to why, for example, if you look at the annual report, page 65, where it talks of the reasons for the variance. That, you know, the objective was not attained due to the negative impact of the implementation of 2x12-hour shift system on available security guards, especially in agriculture. Now, Chairperson, you know, to me it's a very, very lame argument. And what we need to know is that the human being has the capacity to find alternatives. What alternatives did the department look at? If the 12x12 shift stood in your way, why didn't you look at an alternative? Because, Chairperson, the problem here is that, I think I should ask this thing as well, Chair, that in certain countries, I'm made to understand that a company is formed by the state and that inmates who produce certain articles, those articles are then sold and the inmate is then credited with some percentage of the profits that have been accrued. So the day the inmate leaves the facility, the inmate has something to go home with and probably restart a life. Has the department perhaps looked at such alternatives so that we can increase the number of the level of participation of inmates into some or other productive way of doing things? Now, for example, if you take agriculture, Chair, if the inmates know that I will at the end of the day have something apart from the skills that I will be acquiring here, I will, when I leave here, have a little nest egg. There will be an incentive, Chairperson. And at the end of the day, Chair, it's also human. That person has worked. That person has wronged society, but he's worked while he's incarcerated. He should have the right to take something home. I think we should look at such innovative ways of doing things regarding this inmate issue, Chair. Thank you.
I would like to answer that one quickly, member of portfolio committee on offender labor. We would like to report here that on the issue of offender labor that is productive, we have started a process in which we have reported here establishing a trading entity that will look into the needs of the offender after they have left the organization. Example, artisans who work in the furniture, steelworks. As we sell some of these things, we will be able to create value for money. But the process in itself has its own challenges because we have to go through National Treasury, but we can report that we have already met the various stakeholders. Department of National Treasury, we have met government printing works, we have met other government departments on this matter in order to establish a trading entity wherein it's true that happens all over the world. But there will be an exception wherein those who are involved in agriculture, there will be no value that will be able to give money because our agricultural projects are for self-sufficiency to serve our inmates. So there is no money that is exchanging there. So let me clear this. Anything that is agricultural, vegetables, animal husbandry, piggery, all those products go to our centers. So there is no, it's what you call fictitious money evaluation, so they don't get paid. But there is what you call a token amount of money that they get working gratuity.
But indeed, Chairperson, in respect to bigger projects like artists, certain things that we produce that are saleable, which National Treasury will allow us in the dispensation, certainly will accrue money for them. We've seen this in our study tour in New York and other places, so they can start life on a better footing. So we'd like to inform you that we have seen that value in terms of our inmates. With respect to the shifts, variances, I would like to request the chairperson to indicate that will be dealt with in the next discussion wherein the shift issue is going to be discussed. The issue for Mashonisa, staff death, it's a serious matter. I should think the CFO will be able to respond to that. Indeed, if you look at this from a realistic perspective, it would seem as if we had opened micro-lending in the Department of Correctional Service. It's a serious matter, but Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, like I said, this leadership has looked into various loopholes that have been there and the process of recovering some of the monies that are owed in the organization. So the person who can articulate this better is the CFO, measures put in place.
Chairperson, in terms of the staff debt, so what we implemented is to re-revise the installment, the monthly installment, in order to make sure that we recover these monies within 12 months. If it comes B, we recover within 24 months, if we can't recover within 12 months. The other area that we are tapping into, if people getting the debt in check, we also going to deduct about 70% of that in order to reduce this debt. And also on a monthly basis, we're going to monitor this if there is a drop, if all the regions are implementing what we're putting in place. There is also a circular, as I've said, last year we issued a circular around the same issue. If the members will remember, the debts of the department in each year were increasing instead of decreasing. But if you look into our financial statement now, the debts are decreasing. It's no longer increasing since we started implementing these measures. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, just a late one. The outstanding question is, how did it happen? How did it come about that they owe you such a lot of money?
Chairperson, most of these debts, it comes to incapacity leave, where a person is sick at home, is with their healthcare committee, take a long time to finalize these cases. By the time they finalize the cases, after a year or 2 years, the person is sitting at home. By the time they don't finalize, they don't recommend for that. The person, when they come back, all their money that we paid, the sick leave, we need to raise the debt and recover that. That is the area that is causing the problem. I'm fully aware, Chairperson, that the corporate services, we're going to meet with the healthcare committee in order to speed up the finalization of these cases. If a person is at home, is sick, and then the cases get finalized as soon as possible. That's how it emanates in Chairperson.
All right, and once again, because that is just part of it. The other part of it, you've got 1 million rand write-off. That is why we're asking about the 3 years and not the 1 year type of thing. You've got 1.2 million rand or, 1 million rand write-off around, and it must be on, in fact, it's bad debt write-off. So we are concerned about this thing being 3 years, because the longer it goes on, the greater the chance of the write-off. The second part of it that we want to ask you is, before the write-off, do you guys do everything possible in terms of recovery? Getting his pension, getting his estate, because we can't be writing off money if people are still able to refund us or to repay us. So
the 3 years is being asked because we can't see a continuation of R1 million right or from our own people every year. How are you guys? This R1 million, have you done everything possible? And why can't we recover this R1 million? We'll give you the list. We've asked the auditors, they gave it us overnight. We can give you the list and answer the question, have you done everything possible? Are these people dead? Why can't we recover this R1 million?
Honorable members and chairperson, in terms of treasury regulations, it stated very clear that before you write anything off, you need to do everything in your power to make sure that you write it off. We don't just write it off. We do everything and make the follow-ups and everything, more especially even if the person is no longer within our employment. We try to trace as much as we can. We only write it off when we've done everything within our power to make sure. And then we got all the evidence that we cannot able to trace that particular person. That is the only time when we are writing it off. Thank you.
Can I just understand this thing, because it's bugged us for many years. All these write-offs are for state house guarantees type of thing. What is the layman's explanation for this? Vincent goes to the bank for a loan. DCS Seeds goes to the bank and says that we will stand guarantee for this thing. Is that how it works? So after 6 months, if Vincent is unable to pay or whatever happens, the bank then comes to DCS. Why are you guys doing this and having no fallback? I'm saying, is it an obligation on state to do that type of thing? Because then we must change it, because, I mean, in these bad times, many people are losing houses all over. So it means that if the state is doing this across the board, not just correctional services, you must be losing a lot of money as government because of this type of thing. Is there no entry-level criteria? Is it just a matter of, if I work for DCS, or must I work for DCS and earn a certain amount of money, or ganja, how does it work? Before you guys go and sign a guarantee. What are the criteria,
yes, ma'am? It is kind of a service benefit. It goes in line with the salary the person is earning. But even the banks, when they grant the loan, they're looking at the capacity of the person to be able to repay the loan in terms of the home loan. But what happens is that we have most of these state guarantee cases are very old cases, very old. Some are 1993, some are 1980s, and all of that. And when we look at the trends, when the files were coming for write-offs, old files, late 80s, we picked up that there was a trend where someone would have been guaranteed by government, and then a person maybe would have financial problems, the house would be sold in execution, and then, because then when that happens, the bank will recall the difference between the amount that they were able to get as a proceed and what was the actual loan amount. And then they will say to the department, because of this person that has defaulted, they're standing to guarantee pay. Then the department would just pay, historically, would just pay the amount that the bank is recording from the department before they release the guarantee. And kind of not tell you to raise the debt once the person is in service, because normally that's what you need to do. And people, what they would do, would then to resign. Immediately the department pays, then a few months, when we check the trend, we found that a few months then the person would resign from the department. And now on resignation, again, there was a weakness in terms of service termination. The department was not recovering that money from leave gratuity. So the person would resign, get the leave gratuity, get the pension payout, and DCS is stuck with the debt. And after years, then it begin to be writing and say, where are you? So we are still sitting with that backlog. What we've done is engage the Department of Home Affairs just to track whether these people are still alive or they've passed on. And for those that have passed on, we've engaged the services of an ITC company to track and trace them. For some of them, we found that they are still employed. Even those that are on pension, we've written letters to them. Some are positively kind of responding to the department, making arrangements then to pay. But we must remember, this is a breach of a contract and it is interest-bearing. So it is accumulating. We find that the person was owing 20,000 or 15,000, but because every month an interest is added cumulatively on the balance, then this amount of money we find right now is sitting at 200,000 or whatever, because it's all on old debt. So we've come up with that strategy to be able, before the write-off is done, we must be able to say, we've traced on the ITC, the person, and Home Affairs database, the person is no more than at least case. We've got proof that the person is not there, is no longer alive, then write off. But for those that are still alive, we do then the tracking in terms of the ITC to write a letter, final demand. We're in discussion with legal services where people are not positively responding. They're still alive, outside government employment, but they're not positively responding for us to be able to blacklist them. But from the ITC, we picked up that some are still economically active. In other words, whether they're not in government, but the means to repay government is there. And that's why we said we don't want to do this just as finance. We want to have a legal case that these people are challenging us legally. At least we should be able to have a winnable case in a court of law, because this is money that is due to government. And yes, we didn't do right by letting them go with benefits without recovering what is due to government.
Thank you. We've got 10 minutes. We've got Mr. Abraham. Makagula is supposed to follow, but he's disappeared. So, Mark, you can follow up, otherwise, Mr. Abraham. Thank you very much. Mr. Abra?
Yes, this is a follow-up on the one that I forgot Max had asked. Now, Chairperson, I'm pleased to hear that the department is looking at the trading entity. I would like to request the department that we are also stakeholders, this committee, that we should also be consulted, just like you've had discussions with other state departments. But I disagree that an agricultural worker who is going to help to put food on the table of other inmates is not entitled to a stipend. It's absolutely wrong. The principle is wrong. Because you have entered into contracts with private companies to supply food to inmates. You're paying them. Now, there must be a value placed on the production. And if those people are engaged in it, those people, just like the others, should be paid. Otherwise, there's no incentive for anybody to come and work there for agriculture. I do not farm because I want to make food available for Mahala. I've got to make money out of it. Otherwise, I'll be bankrupt. Thank you, Chair. Chair, thank you very much. The first point, Chair, is that you have pointed out a number of inaccuracies in this document. Now, if you look at this document, Chair, I don't know what the cost was to print them. But it's a document that will probably find its way into libraries, into the offices of people that work with the JCPS cluster, that have an interest in it. It will one day probably also be in the archives. Now, I'm questioning the integrity of this document. And we've said this time and time over again, that when anything is brought before us, and it is supposed to be a government document, that document must be impeccable. None of us must find any fault with it, whether it's a spelling error or a substance error, whatever it is, it must be 100%. Point number one. Chairperson, going back again to the utilization of consultants that you referred to on page 226, I find it incredible that organizational culture pilot survey on page 226, the contract value in rand terms was 7.460 million. Call it 7.5, little short of 7.5 million. And it lasted for 66 days. It works out there was one person involved, 114,000 rand per day. Verachtig, I wish I could become a consultant and earn that kind of money. 116,000 rand per day, 14. I don't think that the private sector even will pay this kind of money to the best drain in the world. Secondly, Chairperson, you had a consultant, a single person, who consulted on PIA. I take it Promotion of Access to Information Act. And that person worked for 246 days, and that person was paid 1.387 million for working for that period. A singular person, a consultant. We need an explanation on this. Chair, I think I have already said that this, the integrity of this document and the accuracy of the information herein, I'm personally questioning it. I don't think that we are given the correct information yet. Then, Chairperson, I would like to know that there's been a huge increase from 18 million rand in the 2009-10 budgetary year to 82 million in the payment of performance rewards. Why such a massive increase? And could you give us full information on that? The report tells us that there were 6 centers registered with the Department of Basic Education as full-time schools in DCS. Now, firstly, which centers are those? Where are they situated? And secondly, how many of them are female centers? In the November 2009, Chair, the DCS reported to our committee that they were developing a vetting plan. I've heard the responses about vetting. Was such a plan developed? Has it been finalized? Was it outsourced? You're going to appoint a consultant to do it. And what was the cost? Then, so I've got two more left. The DCS also reported that there was a process to verify the staffing, to verify the vetting, verify and to vet staff in the office of the ministry, the national commissioner, and those working in maximum facilities, and all SMS members. Has that verification and vetting of staff taken place? Of those particular officials, and what was the result of that particular verification exercise, and whether that was perhaps outsourced, whether to NIA or whatever, and whether there were any costs involved, and if there were, what were the costs? The final one, Chair, goes to my friend Mr. Sokela. I have heard what he says in terms of the responses to the Auditor General's findings. But, Chairperson, what worries me here is that when I look at the Auditor General's findings, it gives a picture, and that is from on page 126, where it says, report on other legal and regulatory requirements. And right up from there, going through to predetermined objectives, usefulness of information, reliability, audit findings, findings on compliance, expenditure management, procurement and contracts, right up including leadership, financial and performance management, governance, going right up to number 52. It's in paragraph 15 to 52. These are very serious commissions or omissions on the part of the department, and I don't expect you to go through them all today, Chairperson. But on each one of these, we need to get from you an up-to-date account of exactly what have you done to see that these omissions or commissions do not take place. Chair, in conclusion, I have empathy for people that are involved as officials and, ordinary workers in the DCS. And I have respect for the majority of them. Of course, there are a minority of bad apples. I realize that the tasks that they are sitting with are extremely demanding. But, Chairperson, what I don't see forthcoming, as you must remember that when you take the trappings, and you have to draw the coach. And in drawing the coach, what I don't see forthcoming is a lack, that there is a lack of commitment, a lack of a feeling that this is my country and I am going to do my best when I listen to the extent of the corruption, extent of the wrongdoing and misdemeanor of which many of our officials make themselves guilty of. And such people, Chair, as you've been saying earlier, do not deserve to be in a force like this, and we need to weed such people out. And I want to know from the National Commissioner whether he's prepared to give us a turnaround time as to when such bad apples are going to be thrown out. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I quickly deal with the issue of the schools that are registered with the Department of Education? We've got Usethubeni and Mthonjeni, which are both in KwaZulu-Natal. We have Mthonjeni is in Bajansport, I'm sorry. The other one is in KZN. We have Craydock and St. Albans in the Eastern Cape. We have Voorburg, and which is in the Western Cape, and we have Johannesburg. Those are the ones that are referred to. We have recently added Barberton. We are working towards 13 for the next financial year. Unfortunately, Chairperson, of those that I have mentioned, there's no female center.
Chairperson, on the offenders, members of the portfolio committee, the colleagues work in the agricultural projects. They get a graduate. They are being paid. It is not as huge and attractive like any other person currently. We think and sincerely believe that with the trading entity, the level of remuneration will change. So we do pay everybody who goes to work on offender labor. On the issue of integrity of the report, we certainly welcome the criticism because we cannot wallow here. Every time that we come here, we are being pointed to a right direction. And certainly we appreciate that every time we'll be able to line up our ducks in the manner that meets the standard. And I must say I'm happy that we have a portfolio committee that draws our attention to issues wherein we might have fallen short, and the intention being that we should raise the bar to a level wherein the report has integrity. So sincerely, I appreciate on behalf of my team and also offer our apology where we might have not raised the bar to the level. And I know certainly, and I can say it here, that I did indicate to my team that we will be called upon to look into terms of whether we have accurate information, but we should have also looked in terms of providing a page that looks into errata. That indicates we show an error and we're correcting it. Turnaround time, Chairperson, this is a huge vessel. With the challenges that we have, like any other organization, in the short term, you're looking at 2 to 3 years wherein you are able. And there is no quick fix in any organization. And if, and I believe that we are all on the same page here, the problems and the challenges affecting this organization are very huge. And therefore, I would like to say that in the first year, I've been able to understand what the organization is all about. And in understanding the organization, the culture, the behavior, the attitude, and the levels of concealment that I indicated here, I would have been foolhardy to say that the turnaround time is 18 months. I'm now into 18 months, but I should think in the next a year or so, I'll be able to say this other achievement, because you also need to build a team. You also need to understand as to who is who in the whole scenario. But Chairperson, like any other organization, the turnaround time is dependent as to what organizational culture has been there and what needs to be done. With respect
to vetting, which we have indicated, vetting is a problematic problem. But I should think one needs to also indicate that this government that has inherited what we have, must bear in mind some of the people who have been in this organization for the past 20, 30 years, and they were not vetted themselves. And therefore it's a huge responsibility which NIA and other agents, we cannot outsource the process of vetting. It's a requisite of the state. So that we get the correct report on individuals. But in terms of first line verification of the qualifications, what they call police clearance, those can be done by police, but those are first line. So there is a level of vetting. It's confidential, secret, top secret, in accordance to the levels of information and the position that the people occupy. Process to verify vetting within the ministry, national commissioner, and also senior managers. With respect to the ministry, I would like to believe that the process of vetting of most of the people in the ministry is taking place. In my area, I would like to believe that the staff that has joined me, all of them, they've gone through what is called clearing in terms of police files and the like. But vetting per se is a different perspective altogether. On consultants, Chairperson, I should think this is a sore issue.
Can we sit on the consultants? I was thinking about it now, Mr. Abraham. You know, I said earlier on that it's not just about the rand and cents, which was our initial concern, but the more I sit and think about it, it's really a political security matter. When we have outsiders sitting there designing, owning the license, it's more than just the rand and cents, which is my initial concern. Can we agree that we're going to sit and decide on how we're going to handle consultants in this department? Both the rands and cents, how do we approve these things? You know, because at the end of the day, these guys go with all the information. We have absolutely nothing as to the state. So I'm absolutely concerned about the rands and cents for starters, Commissioner, because we are outsourcing what you should be doing. But secondly, it is a political problem that I will certainly raise within the ANC, that there's no way you can have other people designing our security. As we can't have it in PPPs, so can't we have it with who's going to do our computer system. You are going to be doing electronic monitoring. You don't know how these things work. So I think we need to sit and have a discussion on this matter. It's a serious matter. So if you don't mind, Baba, we are raising the fact that you are using far too many consultants. But it's more than just the rant and cents. We'll sit and we'll discuss the political threats that we have to it in this department. Is that okay? So leave the security, I mean the council, the consultants one. With Cindy, we will get a day where we just talk about the use of consultants, which areas and where shouldn't we use them at all. Is that okay, Mr. Abraham? Is that okay? Okay, then it's the bonus, AG report finding, and then the patriotism of the department in terms of our country. If any of them you want to answer, you can answer them.
Chairperson, if I can deal with the issue of the addressing performance information findings, as well as the other issues. I think in both of the presentations we had indicated that action plans have been developed precisely based on the findings of the AG, and that we are monitoring it on a month-to-month basis. And I think the last slides of both of the presentations that indicate the work that had been done and the work that will be done. And that's certainly something that going forward we can keep the portfolio committee briefed on the progress in relation to that.
Chairperson, sorry. You see what was given here, Chairperson, on the slides is very limited and very sketchy. We want to know that this is what the AG says. These are the shortcomings. On each one of them, this is what happened, and this is how we are going to correct it. And a specific report on all those. Not to just keep us informed in the future. We need to know what has been done and what you plan to do.
To respond to that, what we will do is we will make available the action plans that we've developed. that the portfolio committee has that sense of what we're doing, and then from time to time we can report on the progress as you deem on a quarterly basis or whatever basis.
That we are concerned. I mean, I think it was important in the report. We're saying that the average is about 8,000 rand from 2,000 rand the year before. We're talking about the average. That is 8,000 rand. You know, I was trying to look for it here somewhere to find out what is the monthly salary, because, you know, even if you look at these very people that we are talking about that are scarce skills, sometimes you find there's only one and it's getting a bonus of 15,000. We are just concerned. You know that it's a problem, that if it goes out into the media, but this department gets a qualification, Marwaya Kolama bonuses. It's just something that is always there. So we are asking you, putting the hamburger into that thing. Yes, ma'am.
Chairperson, if you're an understander, perhaps you may use the understanding for bonuses. Joking,
And then the final one, I think, was just a comment. And I think Mr. Abraham is our conscience on this one. Really, I think he's passionate about, and I think you too, Commissioner, when you wear that uniform, you really have to perform more than somebody that is just coming in with whatever on. And I think that's the bottom line of what he's saying. And sometimes we get the sense that there are those few that are not doing it, and we can't lament about it all the time. I think we need to identify them and find a gentle way of getting them out of the system. Because it has a reflection on you. It has a reflection on you. All the time we fight with you, and yet we know Guti URC somewhere or area commissioner somewhere is just not doing his work. We're going to give you a horrendous report, Commissioner, and RC acting for Mpumalanga. We want to give it to you underground, namhlanje. Let me tell you why. Because Cindy is busy preparing the documents, and we are going to discuss it next week. So by the time we make this thing public, it's seriously damaging, Commissioner. By the time we make it public, we are affording you an opportunity of a couple of days to at least say something to us. Because we don't want to make it embargoed as it speaks. But I think Cindy has scheduled it for Tuesday or Wednesday next week. So we will give it to you. We did warn you that we are going to Bethel. We are giving it to you. We are going to discuss it in its raw detail and the consequences. I might as well say this to all of you, that part of our concern, Commissioner, and you'll have that, is after our visit, some of the role players involved have received calls early in the morning saying, we know where you are. We know who's your family members, so we are coming to fetch you. And we've got that evidence now with us here. So we are saying it's really a serious matter. When we take our decisions, it's going to be a harsh decision. But we do think that you guys need to intervene between now and then. And we'll continue to do this across the country. But we are saying it to you, Commissioner, on Tuesday or Wednesday. I'm looking at Cindy, and she's not indicating when we are meeting. On Wednesday. It probably is going to hit everybody else. So you've got between now and Wednesday to at least familiarize yourself with the contents of it. We've got a copy for you, Commissioner, and that's why we said to stay around for 2 minutes. The committee yesterday decided that we should rather give it to you underground before we make it public. Okay. Thank you very much to everybody. We are going to adjourn. You will allow you, Commissioner. We will adjourn. Tomorrow we are going to look at the quarterly report, but if members overnight think of something that refers to the annual report, I don't think we'll be so inflexible that we won't deal with it. But really, the department will be coming prepared to discuss the first quarter. We ourselves will also focus on the first quarter, but if needs be, we might revisit one or two of the stuff that we've dealt with. Now, Commissioner, thank you very much to the department. As we indicated, whatever comes out of this meeting, tomorrow's meeting, the meetings during the week will all form part of our BRR report to to Parliament or the Appropriation Committee later this year. So thank you very much to members, and thank you, Commissioner Yukani.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and the members of the Portfolio Committee. We thank for this interaction. I just want to make an apology.
The CFO will not be joining us tomorrow, and therefore, in the event there are things that need to be responded to, the financial management accountant, Ms. Mareka, will be standing for the CFO. Chairperson, make that apology. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much.